Personalized service and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Homegrown terror. The allegation from federal officials today. Seven people busted. Five are Americans.
They each had nicknames, the indictment alleges. Brother Rot, for instance. Brother B. Brother Sunni. Literally a band of brothers allegedly plotting to blow up federal buildings and the 110-story Sears Tower in Chicago. The government accuses them of seeking out Al-Qaeda support by scoping out and photographing federal buildings in and around Miami. The indictment alleges the leader of the group told an undercover FBI operative he needed a video camera to travel to Chicago.
CBS's Barry Bagnato, CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen.
I'm a little fuzzy on whether any of these men actually had any contact with anyone truly associated with Al-Qaeda, as opposed to a federal agent posing as an Al-Qaeda agent. Now, that may not make all the difference in the world in a legal sense, but it clearly would be important and relevant to jurors if any of this ever makes it to trial.
It's a new video. Al-Qaeda's number two, Ayman al-Zawahiri, praising Abu Musab al-Zarqawi as a soldier, a hero, a martyr, and that his death would not set back the insurgency in Iraq. Now we know the Treasury Department tracks international financial transactions, too, as a tool to fight terror. Treasury Secretary John Snow.
It's a program that is entirely consistent with our democratic values.
Some Democrats say they've gone too far again and snared thousands of innocent people. Massachusetts Congressman Ed Markey.
It is central to the identity of every American family that their financial records are not compromised unless there is a legally obtained warrant.
Personal data files on 28,000 sailors and their families briefly displayed on a website. Fortunately, a site of minimal public interest, evidently, and officials say there's no indication of any actual identity theft. Wildfire in Arizona, contained but not out, says reporter Jennifer Miller.
These firefighters with Chino Valley have been helping fight the Brins fire since Sunday. They believe the worst is now over.
They've been mopping up all night. All day yesterday we mopped up, and today mopping up and cooling it off. So it's doing good.
Some charred land is the only reminder of the danger that lurked here in the canyon. Many of the trees and the beauty of Oak Creek remain intact.
There are also wildfires in California, New Mexico, and Colorado. That story about the dangers of using your cell phone while walking around in a thunderstorm, experts say, don't blame the cell phone or jewelry or small change.
Anytime you're outside, you're at risk. And the fact that you're using a cell phone or whether you have metal really doesn't make any difference.
On the other hand, lightning expert John Jensenius says, don't walk around in a thunderstorm, period. In a parking lot or an open park, you're a lightning target. On Wall Street, the Dow lost 30 points to close at 10,989, the NASDAQ off a point and a half. Oil prices, $70.87 a barrel, up 3 pennies. This is CBS News.
The world changes. The economy changes. Your life changes. And as they do, there's something that doesn't change. The commitment we at UBS feel toward each client. A commitment to offer reviews of your portfolio, to assess your financial goals, and to provide solutions that help you manage all the changes. Wealth management from UBS. In a changing world, an unchanging promise we call you and us. Member SIPC.
You trust your car to take you places this summer. So who do you trust to take care of your car? Sears Auto Centers. Full service car care, bumper to bumper. From diehard batteries to all the top tire brands, even on Sundays. All backed with a national guarantee of satisfaction. And right now, it's our biggest Michelin tire sale of the year, with Michelin tires at the lowest prices of the season. You're going places this summer. Make sure your car is going to the place that protects it best. Sears Auto Centers. See store for guarantee details. Exclusions apply. See LN 7806.
Conflicting stories feed defense hopes in the Duke lacrosse rape cases.
One of the first police officers to talk with the woman who says she was raped during a Duke lacrosse team party described her as nervous and said her story changed several times. According to defense lawyers, the woman first said she was one of four exotic dancers at the party and that she was raped by five players. She later said only two women were there and that three players sexually assaulted her. Three Duke lacrosse players face rape and kidnapping charges. Jim Rasuva, CBS News.
There are product liability problems, and then there are problems. Charles Lennon in Providence, Rhode Island, went to court. He says he got an implant 2 years before Viagra would have solved his problem. Thing is, the implant wouldn't go down. Not for 10 years. Couldn't hug people, couldn't go to the beach or go much of anywhere. He won the lawsuit, $400,000. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Hello and welcome back to Ask the Orkin Man.
Hello, Orkin Man.
Hi.
As a banker, I want to know if our financial institutions are safe from invaders.
Well, invaders attack the biggest investment most people make, their homes.
Mm.
Termites cause more damage than fires, earthquakes, and tornadoes put together.
Oh, no. How will this affect the markets?
Well, I would rate Orkin a buy. Orkin has been fighting invasions for over 100 years. We know how to control termites.
Protect your home. Protect your family. Orkin can help. Call 1-800-ORKIN-MAN for a free inspection.
You trust your car to take you places this summer. So who do you trust to take care of your car? Sears Auto Centers. Full-service car care, bumper to bumper. From diehard batteries to all the top tire brands, even on Sundays. All backed with a national guarantee of satisfaction. And right now, it's our biggest Michelin tire sale of the year, with Michelin tires at the lowest prices of the season. If you're going places this summer, make sure your car is going to the place that protects it best. Sears Auto Centers. See store for guarantee details. Exclusions apply. CLN 7806.
Welcome to another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show, live, unscripted, and unrehearsed. Get ready for Progressive Talk Radio. Here I come. That's a remake of the old Rare Earth song from Al Kooper. Took a super session to get this. On the Peter B. Collins program today, next hour, we'll spend it with Scott Dick, retired from the Army as a major. He's our contributor on military and veterans affairs. We got a long list of things to talk about. More action in Afghanistan. There have actually been more air raids over Afghanistan in the last 5 months than we have launched over Iraq. We're also going to talk about the various reports of atrocities by and to American forces in Iraq. And the Senate debate this week over the future policies for Iraq. Also on our program, we'll get an update on the budget deadlock in Sacramento from California Assembly Budget Chair John Laird. He'll be with us at the top of our third hour. And more from Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. He even got Roger Hedgecock, who is a conservative talk show host in San Diego, to acknowledge that District 50, the Bill Bray-Busby race, the outcome cannot be trusted. We'll talk about that and a lot of other e-voting issues, including the remarkable comments on this program on Wednesday from Democratic Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, apologizing to those of us who continue to raise questions about the stolen election in Ohio in 2004 and vowing to actually do something about it in the future. So that's what we'll take up with Brad in our third hour today. You're always welcome to join us with a question or comment whenever the urge strikes you. That's why we have phone lines here. 831-899-5792 works on the Central Coast. And you can call us toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. Drop me an email whenever you like, peter@peterbcollins.com. I always appreciate hearing comments, good or bad, and people share information with me, and it's one of the things that makes this program so valuable. So feel free to drop me a line or send me info, peter@peterbcollins.com. We welcome back this hour to our program investigative reporter Robert Parry. He worked for AP, Newsweek, and Frontline, and now is the proprietor of ConsortiumNews.com. His most recent book is called Secrecy and Privilege, Rise of the Bush Dynasty from Watergate to Iraq. And Bob Parry's under the weather a little bit today. Thanks for joining us despite that, Bob.
Well, thank you, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure, and you're in the Eastern time zone. It's after cocktail hour, and if you want to medicate with a little scotch on the rocks, I will not object.
I've heard that works, but I haven't really tried it.
Okay, well, try it when you like. It works for me. I asked you on the program today for a couple of reasons, because some of your recent posts really caught my attention, and I'd like to discuss them with you. But I want to credit a listener named Paula Kay in Eureka, Arcata, who has been in touch with me, and she's the one who alerted me to your rather dire financial situation at Consortium News. And it looks like, for the moment, you've been able to raise enough money to keep the servers up and keep the phones running. But I want to let people know that before the end of this hour, we are going to pause for a non-NPR pledge break and see if we can draw a little attention and get people to help support your good work at ConsortiumNews.com.
Well, thank you, Peter. That's very nice.
And I do take it from the latest posting on the website that you did get some donations over the last week or so that are going to help you along.
Right. I mean, I think the main thing has been that there's been a failure over the years, I think, among some of the people with substantial money on the more progressive side to understand the importance of media.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you do, and some others of us who are involved with media understand that it's a crucial way to reach the American people with information that they have to have if the democracy is going to work. And it's sort of taken for granted, I think, by many on the progressive side that's going to happen. They expect the journalists to do their jobs and somehow the outlets to do their jobs and get the information out. In some ways, they don't trust that, but they sort of seem to leave it without being involved in it. Mm-hmm. The conservatives took a very different point of view, going back from Watergate and the time when Nixon was forced from office, and when the Vietnam War went badly and when the U.S. pulled out, and there were the Pentagon Papers exposing the reality behind it, the conservatives took a very proactive position, which was they were going to build up media to get their message out, get their version of information out very aggressively to the American people.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw building up over the next quarter century, really, this huge infrastructure they've put together, which goes from, you know, magazines and newspapers and books to radio, TV, and very well-funded internet sites. So
and think tanks and phony think tanks like the one in Washington, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, that fronts for the oil, gas, and other resource extracting industries and denies global warming.
Right, and they also have groups that are specially designed to attack honest reporters. They have groups like Accuracy in Media, which have been around for a while and got better funded during the 70s and 80s. And I was with, you know, I'm just a reporter, really. When you come down to it, I was with AP and Newsweek. I was an investigative reporter. I did many of the stories that later became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw how this was taking shape and how, when you got to very sensitive points, issues that were a great concern to the conservative, to the Reagan-Bush crowd, they would target individual reporters to essentially try to discredit them and shut them up.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, it worked. Reporters learned that they did not want to risk their careers. So we started Consortium News 10 years ago in 1995 with the idea that there must be a better way to do this, to get good information to the American people on important topics. In the mid-90s, there was all this stuff about O.J. Simpson or people's sex lives. It was just a crazy media environment. And I thought there needed to be a place to create sort of a narrative, an honest narrative for the American people of what happened to us during the Cold War, how it changed us, and now how what was happening to us in the post-Cold War period and how that was carrying over.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the goal, really. And we built up a staff. I basically cashed out my Newsweek retirement fund to do it.
Okay.
And we went ahead and built up this little website, which really had some success. We had reporters in South America and in Eastern Europe, as well as in the United States. And we began piecing together important chapters of our history on the Internet and using it in that way. So, but we've always had this trouble of trying to get additional support for that work. Even though we have a very tight budget and we make every penny count,
mm-hmm.
you do need some money.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're going to, like I say, we're going to talk about a few stories, and later this hour I'll spend a minute or two and drive people to your website and shame them into making a contribution. Now, parallel to what you just described, you have a post that went up on June 21st which analyzes the posture of the Washington Post and its hostility to those who raise honest questions about the war in Iraq.
Right.
And I think that it's interesting to parallel that with the development of some progressive voices, but even combined, we don't carry the weight that the Washington Post does. And, of course, we looked at Watergate and earlier episodes when the Post distinguished itself, but those days are history, and they've gone well beyond resting on those laurels.
Right. The Washington Post has been living off the Watergate scandal for more than a quarter century now. Well, I guess more than, 30 years now. It's and it's been that long since the Washington Post was the scrappy paper that it won the reputation of being. It was never really quite that idyllic as you would see it in All the President's Men. It wasn't right. that tough or fierce, but it did have that element to it, and did pretty good work there. And but what's happened since? And I was part of that company when I was at Newsweek. So I saw some of this inside. There was a sort of drift toward a more neoconservative position inside the news organization.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw this with, inside the family. Katherine Graham did not really want to have another Watergate. When we got to Iran-Contra, there was real hesitancy to go very far with it. There was real, I was basically hired because I'd been doing Iran-Contra, but then I encountered this resistance, and it was somewhat that they just didn't want to go through that difficulty anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it was partly an ideological affinity with the Reagan-Bush administration on issues, on foreign policy issues. So you had a combination, and then after Donnie Graham, her son, took over, he moved even more in that direction.
Yeah. We need to take a break, Bob Perry. We'll continue in just a moment. We'll enumerate for people some of the commentary coming from the Washington Post editorial pages, particularly in recent weeks. And you're welcome to join our conversation with Robert Perry from ConsortiumNews.com. Get on the line if you'd like to join us, 831-899-5792 for the Central Coast, or toll-free 1-888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. We'll continue in a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hello. This is Al Moore with More Imported Cars in Monterey, where we feature quality pre-owned motor cars. It has been said that the world's best automobiles are manufactured within sight of the Alps. They include Mercedes-Benz, BMWs, and Porsches. These are the marks of dreams, and they're the manufacturers we specialize in. Some of our European autos start as low as $21,000 and experience very little depreciation. In fact, many of our Porsches actually increase in value, and our Porsches and other German autos have surprisingly good gas mileage too. Many of our autos are covered under manufacturer's warranty or are available with short or long-term service agreements. We also can arrange financing, and we do accept trades.
Drop by More Imported Cars, 999 Del Monte Avenue in Monterey, or browse to moreimports.com. That's M-O-H-R imports.com. Call Al Moore at 831-373-3131.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. This week on Rock Rollin' Real Estate, don't miss our special guest, Glenn Plantone. He'll be telling us about the hottest areas to invest in. Glenn has just returned from his second trip to Costa Rica to tell us about some amazing property there. Can you say mucho gusto? That's this Sunday at 10 a.m. Now heard from Big Sur to Eureka, Rock Rollin' Real Estate. Listen online at rockrollinrealestate.com. We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Twenty-one minutes past the hour, you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm your humble host, Peter B. Joe Foreman is at the controls today, and you're invited to join us. Robert Perry with us for this entire hour. Lines available, 831-899-5792, or toll-free, 888-579-2540. And Bob Perry, in perusing your website, I noted that you've done some work over the years with Norman Solomon. He's a frequent contributor and a friend of our program, and he was on with us just the other day.
Right. Norman's a good guy.
Yeah, he sure is. Now, back to the Washington Post, and in particular, their recent editorial commentary. And I want to go specifically to the quote that you cited from June 17th. And this followed the contentious debate in the House over the what I would call a jaundiced resolution framed by the Republicans as a way to try to provoke or entrap Democrats into a vote they didn't want to make. And following that debate, the Washington Post editorialized like this. Many Democrats looking to exploit bad news without appearing to rejoice in it, demagogued about presidential lies, and lies is in quotes, obtusely denied any relationship between Iraq and the war on terrorism, and called for troop withdrawal without honestly facing the consequences of such a move. And Bob Perry, as you note, using the word demagogue to attack those who accuse the president of lying just really sets a cycle of neener, 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 and of course doesn't acknowledge the truth, which is that Bush has repeatedly lied to the American people, and the American people largely know it.
Right. It seems like it's an official reality in Washington that that George Bush never lied about Iraq. It's almost like what you have to say, conventional wisdom, if you will. But it's wrong. It's not true, and they keep using this. There has been the argument, of course, you hear it from Secretary Rumsfeld and others, that that Bush didn't lie. And then they cite the WMD evidence. They say, well, he believed in that, even though it turned out to be wrong. And I think there's a real good case to be made that he lied about the WMD evidence or didn't care what the truth was. But we have gone back repeatedly now and said, but there are a number of other clearer cases where he has lied about things he knew directly about regarding Iraq. And in one of the cases I've cited is that in the summer of 2003, he began claiming that Saddam Hussein had not allowed the UN inspectors in to look for what WMD, which is simply not true, and Bush knew it wasn't true, but he apparently trusted that he trusted the timidity of the Washington press corps and I guess the weak memories of the American people that he could get away with it.
Well,
saying this and has said it over and over and over again up to the present.
Let's briefly cite the truth of the matter so that our conservative listeners, who often attack me for just claiming that the president has lied, the truth regarding that issue is.
Well, the truth is that in the fall of 2002, UN inspectors were allowed to go into Iraq, headed by Hans Blix. And we all knew about this. We wrote about it at the time. We watched it. Some of the conservatives made fun of it, but it was there. And the inspectors went to sites that had been pointed out as possible WMD hiding places, and they checked them out and found nothing. And they reported increasingly good cooperation with the Iraqis. And by March, they were saying they were allowed to go anywhere they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they got closer to mid-March, Bush insisted that they leave.
Right.
And obviously the reason was he was intending to invade. And so he forced them out. He personally forced them out. Now, for him then to say 3 months later, in July of 2003, that Saddam didn't let the inspectors in, and then repeat this charge in varying ways for the next 3 years, is simply not true. And I'm not sure what a lie is if someone who has been directly involved with something says it the way it isn't. I mean, I think it becomes clear, and you go through, there are a number of cases in the article, we go back through a variety of points where Bush has said things that don't square with the truth at all.
Mm-hmm.
He said, for instance, that he considered war a last resort. He did not consider war a last resort. We now have the documents from England showing that he was planning on this much, much earlier than we had understood,
right,
and that he was determined to do it.
Mm-hmm. There's an interesting, I think it was General Pace, was trying to defend Rumsfeld. This is about 6 weeks ago when the retired generals came out one by one calling for Rumsfeld's resignation.
Right.
And Pace was defending Rumsfeld and kind of questioning Tommy Franks' credibility, saying that if Franks really wanted more troops, all he had to do was say so. And in telling that story, he said, you know, Tommy Franks had 2 years to tell us what the troop levels were needed. And so when you backtime that 2 years from our invasion of 2003, that supports Paul O'Neill's contention that they were planning to invade Iraq as early as the spring of 2001.
Oh, right. I mean, you know, Treasury Secretary O'Neill and others, and Richard Clark's another one, the former counterterrorism chief, they've made it clear that this was an intent, this was a desire that the administration had, that they did not, that whatever their reasoning was, and I'm not sure we really know exactly what their full thinking was, but whatever it was, they were going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had to just line up the facts, as the Downing Street memo said, as the head of British intelligence, Richard Dearlove, said, they were making the intelligence fit the evidence.
Right, fixing it around the policy.
Fixing it around the policy.
And you cite most recently March 21st in response to the peppering questions of Helen Thomas. The president said, well, I was hoping to solve this, the Iraq problem, diplomatically. And, of course, he repeats the lie that and when Saddam chose to deny the inspectors when he chose not to disclose, then I had the difficult decision to make to remove him. Well, we know that that doesn't square with the contemporaneous accounts, including Sir David Manning, and who was Tony Blair's right-hand man, who reports the January 31st meeting, 2003, in Washington, Bush and Blair. And Bush is speculating about how they could produce a more compelling cause of war. And he says, well, why don't we just paint a plane with UN colors and shoot it down and blame the Iraqis? And so I think that speaks volumes to the truth. And when we return in the next segment, I want to talk a little bit about the Senate debate this past week and why, once again, the media continues to report the Republican talking points as true and accurate, and basically denigrates those who call it into question. We'll continue in just a moment with journalist Robert Perry. Visit his website, consortiumnews.com, and donate if you can. He needs your help to keep doing the great work he does. We'll continue in just a moment, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Parents, do you need cash for college? This year, more than $100 billion is available for financial aid. Let AboutCollegeFunding.com help you navigate the complicated process to accessing your share of these funds. AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. To schedule your free one-hour consultation with RJ Moyet, call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and fun. I interview authors, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make the Monterey Bay Area such a delicious slice of our tasty planet. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Sponsored in part by Kitchen Studio.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction.
Iraq, weapons of mass destruction.
A clear threat to the United States.
And there's dozens of ballistic missiles.
It is sponsored and sheltered terrorists.
Paying suicide
Chemical
bombers.
Weapons are equally charged.
Biological weapons, including anthrax and botulism toxins.
Biological and chemical agent to kill millions of people.
Chemical weapons, including VX and sarin, mustard gas.
To a massive and sudden horror.
Massive death and destruction.
Death. On a massive scale.
A little music from the 80s, back during the Iran-Contra era. That's the Psychedelic Furs called President Gas. Kind of applies today. We continue with Robert Perry, the investigative reporter, whose website is a great resource, consortiumnews.com. And, Bob, just before the break, we were enumerating some of the failings of the Washington Post. But in the larger sense, we do have a lapdog media in this country. that clearly responds to the Republican intimidation. And as we saw the debate this week unfold in the Senate, and it's encouraging that 39 votes were available for the watered-down Levin resolution. You know, and some Democrats like Evan Bay and Hillary Rodham Clinton actually voted for a plan to get out of Iraq. At the same time, we saw a lot of negative reporting about the differences among Democrats and very little that scrutinized the remarkable demagoguery of Republicans.
Well, I think you know, basically the progressive community is not going to get a fair shake from the mainstream press at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen this go on now for a long time. If you go through the Clinton-Gore era, many of the harshest attacks on Clinton came from the Washington Post and the New York Times. And I know folks in those organizations, and their thinking was they were going to prove once and for all they weren't the liberal media. They've been hounded with that liberal tag for a long time, and they wanted to show they weren't liberal. And people have actually said to me, we were going to show we'd be tougher on any Democrat than a Republican. And I'm not, there's nothing wrong with being tough on a Democrat, but you shouldn't approach it that you're going to be tougher on a Democrat than a Republican just to sort of show something. You're supposed to be even-handed. That's the idea of journalism. But that's the kind of mindset that had taken over Washington. And then when we get back to the, you know, and of course during Reagan Bush, there was sort of a much softer view, and then it got really tough and aggressive during Clinton-Gore. And then when we get to the new Bush administration, we're back to the soft, you know, whatever you say goes kind of approach. And it got worse, of course, after September 11th, when the press just basically began fawning. There was almost a fear in the journalistic community that Americans would see reporters as unpatriotic. So you better even wave the flag stronger than anyone else would.
Yeah.
So you had this sort of tendency, and I think that's carried over now, even despite the recognition that the WMDs didn't exist. That these were a bunch of lies that had got us in here, and that this war is kind of an endless mess, there's still this feeling of you've got to give the Republicans the advantage. You've got to bend over backwards in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're harsher on the Democrats, and they look for ways to write those stories. You know, Democrats divided, Republicans united. And it's not really based on what's really most important, which is that we're engaged in a policy where 2,500 American soldiers have died, tens of thousands of Iraqis have died. This was a war that didn't have to be fought. It was
well, and
a war
the Republican unity is the unity of lemmings.
And also there's not the sense, there's very little proportionality in Washington, and proportionality in the sense of how does this really, you know, is there a way to describe how this really fits into the bigger picture? If you want to have The simple fact is that all the kinds of scare tactics that we've seen from Bush and Cheney, they're about how if we don't get in here and kill all these folks, they're going to spread this empire from Spain to Indonesia, they say. Cheney said it yesterday on the CNN interview with John King. And this is a fantasy. The reality is that the Al-Qaeda wanted the United States to react to the 9/11 attacks. They felt that if the United States came after them in a clumsy way, that it would help them. They could help build their movement. Here was a group that had been chased to literally the ends of the earth. They were hiding in the mountains of Afghanistan. And they were not going to have some kind of caliphate from Morocco or in Spain to Indonesia. These were guys hiding out. They've been driven out of all their countries by their own governments. They're all exiles. And Iraq for them was heaven sent.
Yeah.
And the longer we stay there and continue this, the deeper the bitterness, the easier it is for them to recruit. This is not working. And if you talk to any of the intelligence people who are really serious about this, they will say it's not working in a good way for the United States.
Well, and Bob Bush used the word crusade and then dispatched Christian American soldiers to Islamic soil. That's exactly what Osama wanted to suck us into. Maybe
right.
Not specifically Iraq, but he certainly wanted to see us invade a Middle Eastern country so that he could then rally the Islamic populations around these infidels who have invaded their holy lands.
One thing we point out at Consortium News is that if you look at the so-called Zawahiri letter, Zawahiri, of course, is bin Laden's second in command.
Right.
And there was a letter he sent to Zarqawi, supposedly,
mm-hmm.
and was intercepted by the United States. And in it, I mean, there have been parts of this that have been cherry-picked for reasons that the administration has wanted to use. But if you read the actual letter, these guys are terrified that Americans will withdraw. Because if Americans withdraw from Iraq, it will set back their program. They feel it's important that the United States stay there because then they can build up their forces and become part more an integral part of the Iraqi opposition. They say if the Americans leave suddenly, we will be in a bad fix. Many of our soldiers will want to just lay down their arms and go home. And they come up with this idea of a caliphate to promise them that, but even that caliphate they're talking about is just in the area around Iraq, in the so-called Levant section near the Mediterranean. It's not this grand thing that Bush likes to talk about. So even the intelligence we have is that these guys really want us there, because as long as we're there, they are magnified in importance. It's kind of a symbiotic relationship between Bush and bin Laden.
And you can imagine bin Laden and Zawahiri, in the comfort of their cave with the satellite TV, rooting on the Republicans in the Senate as they say, stay the course. Yeah, that's what we want. That's the Al-Qaeda way. Let's take a caller here. Ben and Salinas, join us. You're on the air with Peter B. and Robert Perry.
Yes, I'm chomping at the bit to get this question out. Considering the war profiteering and the lies under which we're laboring to be there in this so-called sovereign country, according to Mr. Nuclear and the White House there, mm-hmm. when you consider all that, what's going to happen when this sovereign country's judicial government when they acquit Saddam Hussein under their laws? Let's say because they can't, the lawyers are getting knocked off, they can't protect their officials. So what's going to happen, and whether it's by fear or some backroom dealing like the Iran-Contra where a bunch of pardons are waiting, what's going to happen when the Iraqi government, the people in power that we've put in power, the puppets, mm-hmm. when they acquit this guy, what's going to be the fallout and the outcome? I'm curious
for you guys
to consider that.
What do you think?
I don't think anyone expects that Saddam will be acquitted.
Can you say O.J.?
Pardon? Well, we're not living in that kind of a situation here. This is not a place where you have a real jury that evaluates things, and it's not like the American or English system.
It doesn't appear that there are any appeals possible once the court rules, too.
This is being set up to execute him, but there is the big question of this idea, this bloodlust. Other equally unsavory dictators have been sent to The Hague, where they are tried and their crimes are laid out in more dispassionate way, but President Bush wanted Saddam Hussein killed,
mm-hmm.
and so that's why he was prosecuted in Iraq, despite the fact that this has been a circus of a trial.
Yeah, and Bremer instituted a death penalty in Iraq so that he can be killed there.
Okay, well, let's just wait and see how the parade washes out. And once again, in November, if we don't get rid of those rigged voting machines, we can kiss it goodbye. That's the bottom line to me.
All right, Ben, thanks a lot. Ben, do you have an extra $20 you could send to consortiumnews.com?
It's all right. Don't.
No, I'm doing my part here.
I very much appreciate it. When I did that article that Peter's talking about, I get a lot of $10, $20 donations. It was very sweet. It was extremely touching. I'm a professional journalist, and often we are a bit removed from our readers. We just think they're out there. But it was very sweet not only to get people giving small donations, but with the emails they would send with them. It was quite moving.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ben, I won't put the finger on you at long distance here, but I just want to mention to any of our listeners, if you've got an extra $20 or maybe even more, you've had a good week or you're in the middle of a good year, feel free to go online to consortiumnews.com. There's a donate button at the top of the homepage, and you can either use your credit card or there's a mailing address there where you can send some cash along and help keep this fine effort underway. All right. Thank you, Ben. Thanks for your call. We're going to take a quick break and return. If you'd like to talk with Bob Perry, he's with us for one more segment, 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast, or toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. When we return, I want to talk about a recent article that Bob wrote connecting the Bush family with the Reverend Sung Myung Moon and the Unification Church. That's next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Childhood Matters, the show for parents and everyone who cares about our kids.
In what ways are boys and girls different at birth, and how do nature and nurture contribute to a child's gendered experience of life? I'm Nurse Rona. Join us to discuss the social and cultural influences on gender and hear suggestions for fostering a healthy sense of self in children.
Childhood Matters, this Sunday morning at 9 on KRXA 540.
All you guys on the left, you demonize this president.
At Gitmo, they're not even garden variety POWs. They're the worst of the worst. They don't even receive the protection of the Geneva Conventions.
Man, I really believe that pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for America, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face that you helped us have.
I totally concur. And the problem is we have adopted that agenda at the high levels of our government. And so
I believe Saddam Hussein is a threat to the American people. And I've got good evidence to believe that.
Undeclared chemical warheads in Iraq.
The declaration that he made is proof positive.
Saddam Hussein possesses some of the world's deadliest weapons.
Saddam Hussein has biological weapons and the capability to rapidly produce more, many more.
The world is increasingly seeing this from the United States' point of view.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
He's not disarming.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
I'm Chuck Mackley, owner of Executive Financial Services. I can get you up to 12% interest on your investment on first and second trust deeds secured by real property. Don't settle for 3 to 5% on your money. Call me today at 443-7277. Your investment will be protected by the equity in the property and title insurance. Put your hard-earned money to work. Call Executive Financial Services at 443-7277 and ask for Chuck Mackley.
It is useless to resist us.
12 minutes before the hour, as we continue on the Peter B. Collins Show with investigative reporter Robert Parry, P-A-R-R-Y. Visit his website, consortiumnews.com, where you can read his thoughtful pieces about some of the issues we're discussing this hour. And, Bob, next I wanted to turn to Reverend Moon, the Unification Church, the Washington Times, and their linkage to the Bush family. There's some very interesting connections, and they continue to the present.
Right. The Sung Myung Moon was this theocrat from Korea who was really working with Korean intelligence back in the 1970s as part of an effort that became known as Korea Gate in the United States. It was an effort to buy influence in the U.S. political process, to get buy influence in Congress, to buy influence in the media and in academia. This was basically the U.S. government intercepted their plans. And this was exposed in these hearings that were held in the House of Representatives in the late 1970s. Now, what happened from that was that the information about the secret money flows that were coming in to fund Moon's operations, which were known domestically here as a cult, he would sort of brainwash young people into following him. He had rather bizarre religious views, relating?
Well, let me just break in for a second.
Sure.
I moved to California 30 years ago this summer, and in the 1970s, the Moonies were on the streets recruiting wayward kids, homeless people, runaway types, and they had a ranch in Sonoma County about an hour north of San Francisco where they used to send these people for what many people termed brainwashing. It was a heavy form of indoctrination, and then these people would reappear on the streets of San Francisco selling flowers and, of course, giving all the proceeds to the Unification Church. It was indeed a cult.
Oh, yeah, it was very cult-like. And the but there was always another side to it. There was a political criminal side to this. Basically, the Moon operation was a money laundering operation, and they were bringing money in from Asia and then later from South America into the United States to help fund not just their religious activities but also political activities. They were determined to make themselves very useful to the Republican Party, and so after Moon got in trouble with the Korea Gate, those allegations then wound their way through our justice system, and in 1982 he was prosecuted for basically tax fraud. But it came out of this wire, probably these cash flows. And the Reagan-Bush administration tried to stop the prosecution, but it was being handled by professional prosecutors in New York, so it went ahead, and so Moon was prosecuted, convicted, and imprisoned. About the same time, in 1982, with vast sums of money, he opened up the Washington Times,
right,
which became a very important right-wing propaganda apparatus in Washington. It would put out some of the ugliest attacks on people. It would spread some of the themes that would then be picked up by the Republicans. And it was relied on heavily, as the years went on, by Reagan and Bush. Reagan called it his favorite paper. Bush made similar comments when he was president, how valuable it was. And it was used essentially to go after their opponents. For instance, when in the Dukakis race in '88, the Washington Times put out false information about Michael Dukakis' mental health, which was used to discredit Dukakis. In '92, they were spreading stories about Bill Clinton being a KGB agent. It was, some of the stuff was kind of ludicrous, but it was being put out into the political process and raising doubts, starting these kinds of little firestorms among the conservative activists. So that went on, and after Bush lost in '92, Bush Senior, that is, he went to work essentially for Reverend Moon. He gave speeches with very large fees attached. He and Barbara Bush both. They never have said how much they got, but when I was investigating this in the mid 1990s, people from inside the church, the Unification Church, who had defected, were saying that they had earmarked about $10 million to pay off ex-President Bush.
Mm-hmm.
And in one case, they were having trouble in Argentina. They were starting a paper like the Washington Times in the mid 1990s, and they were being attacked by some of the South American news organizations for their drug ties and because they'd worked with some of the drug lords down there, as well as with some of the right-wing military governments. And it was George Bush Sr. who flies in to give the keynote address at this gala inaugural for the new newspaper. And that's where he says, with Moon present, you know, Reverend Moon is the man with the vision.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bushes have always been very tight with the Moon's people because they provided money. They helped fund a number of the conservative operations, including helping Viguerie with his direct mail, helping Falwell when Falwell was having trouble with Liberty University. He would step in and be the angel to provide money to groups that were having, right-wing groups that were having financial trouble.
And one of Reverend Moon's top lieutenants, Bo-hee Pak, was a colonel in the KCIA, the South Korean Intelligence Agency. And I've always been uncomfortable because it's not clear where the original Moon fortune came from and if he's just a front for the South Korean government. You also point out that the Washington Times Foundation has given $1 million to a foundation in Houston that apparently laundered the money Tom DeLay style so that it could go into the George H.W. Bush Presidential Library Fund.
Right. this is just the latest aspect of Moon being the benefactor for the Bushes. And he's done this before, and he used a similar technique when he was helping out Falwell back in the early 90s when Liberty University, Falwell's university, was having financial troubles. They couldn't pay their debt. And Moon, and I was able to trace this through IRS records, Moon put $3.5 million into a nonprofit, which then turned around and bought up at a fraction of the face value, the debt, for Liberty University to prevent it from being foreclosed upon. So this is a technique that Moon uses, and it obviously builds a great deal of sympathy. But the key thing I've pointed out is that it also allows his criminal enterprises to go forward. There's been a lot of evidence, including statements by his daughter-in-law when she left the Moon cult, about their money laundering and how it's done. And it's, in some of it's rather, rather crude, but Moon has never stopped this. He's never stopped bringing in money illegally from overseas. We don't know where it comes from, although he's had ties to organized crime both in Asia and South America. He has brought in huge sums of money, and he's poured it into the American political process.
And all that money came from selling flowers on the street, right?
Well, no, it didn't. One thing I found out when I was doing this reporting on this some years ago, and I talked to a number of people who were in the church, who've been involved, most of those small deals, like the selling of trinkets, there were some scams they'd run at malls. They'd set up some kiosk, and they'd sell some light thing that looked kind of cute, but they'd put a when you buy the light, you'd get a cheaper light, so they'd show you one thing and sell you another. There were all these little scams they would pull. But that money was really to pay for their local operations. It didn't really go back to the bigger process. The bigger operations, the real money-dependent ones, like the Washington Times, which costs probably they probably lose $100 or $200 million a year sometimes on this thing. So those operations require money coming in to keep them going. Moon said that after one decade, he'd lost $1 billion on the Washington Times.
We're talking with Robert Perry here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Just about 2 minutes remaining, Robert, and I wanted to switch to a piece that you wrote just after the California primary on June 7th. You posted it, and it's called Why Democrats Lose. Later in our program, we're going to talk about the continuing controversy over the election itself. But you took a look at the politics and the way Democrats run races. Talk a little bit about that and the strong reaction you got from readers.
Well, you know, first, I think obviously it's crucial that elections be done honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's reprehensible. We've written a lot about the both in 2000 and 2004, how those elections were tampered with, and how and anyone who tries to block voters from going to the polls in any way is acting in a very un-American way. But there's also the need to counter what the conservatives try to do with their media, that this media imbalance allows them to get very aggressive messages into play against the Democrats. So if a Democrat makes a misstatement, as happened with Busby, where she stumbled over her words on something about immigration, mm-hmm. they're able to exploit that and use it aggressively against that candidate, almost to disqualify the candidate. And that is their plan. I was talking to one of the top oppo people for the Republicans a few weeks ago, just before that election,
mm-hmm.
and he was describing their plans. He said, we have this now wired electronically, so we can just, if we get the Democrats to take a bad vote in Congress, which they've been doing, as you know, in the last couple of weeks, they've been putting all these very emotional votes before the Congress.
Booby traps, get, yes.
And then they zap them to these local radio stations, local newspapers, their friendly editors, and they make sure that becomes the issue. So even before the Democrat gets a chance to respond,
mm-hmm.
that's the buzz all across his district.
Right, the buzz for Busby. We've got to stop there, Robert, but thank you for joining us. Hope you feel much better. And
thank
I hope
you.
Some of our listeners will contribute at consortiumnews.com. We'll
okay,
talk
Peter.
Again soon. Thank you, sir. All right, that's this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. Visit us at peterbcollins.com.
The following is a test of the emergency alert system in accordance with regulations of the Federal Communications Commission. This station is testing its emergency alert system equipment. This is only a test. This has been a test of the emergency alert system. We now return you to regular programming.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale from Reality Radio, just reminding you of our new time slot, 9 to 10 Saturday mornings on KRXA. We're your local progressive talk radio. We'll interview our homeless and our wealthiest, local celebrities, ordinary and extraordinary people. We keep it real here. So meet me Saturday morning right here, 9 to 10 on KRXA 540. I'm Sheila Gale, and together we're Reality Radio.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
A new message from Bin Laden's deputy. Data on thousands of Navy personnel and their families appears on the web.
They don't seem to have a clue as to how this could have happened.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. It's the second message this week from Ayman al-Zawahiri. This tape, broadcast by Al Jazeera, was apparently rushed into production after the killing of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi in Iraq. He praises the late leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq as the Prince of Martyrs. Addressing President Bush, al-Zawahiri says, "Not one of us is killed without us taking revenge for his death." The video is fairly sophisticated. In addition to a rifle leaning against the black backdrop, a picture of al-Zarqawi appears over al-Zawahiri's shoulder.
This seems to be another indicator of increasing capabilities despite our three-year war in Iraq and our five-year war against terrorism.
Dr. Peter Cederberg is a terrorism expert at the University of South Carolina. Now this.
The following is a message from Pfizer.
This is Dr. Drew Pinsky. Some of you may know me as Dr. Drew. Today's topic is men's sexual health, more specifically, performance problems. And we've got a brave guy on the line.
I don't know why I'm even calling, because it's not really an issue. It only happens every once in a while, like when I'm tired or stressed out, a little under the weather.
Just a guess, but are we talking about erectile dysfunction?
Oh, no, not ED. Just a very occasional little glitch. Yeah, I'd call it an erectile glitch.
Well, a lot of guys don't realize it, but ED may not happen all the time. It can be unpredictable.
Now you mention it, I never know when it's going to happen.
And that's something you want to live with?
Good point. I'll talk to my doctor.
To learn more about ED and how to treat it, talk to your doctor or visit JustAskToday.com.
It's just the latest compromise of sensitive information on U.S. military personnel. The Navy just acknowledged that the names, birth dates, and Social Security numbers of 28,000 sailors and their relatives have appeared on the Internet, possibly on a subcontractor's website. CBS News correspondent David Martin tells us about the Navy's response.
The first thing they're doing is notifying the sailors and the family members who had their personal information compromised, and then those people can be particularly alert to possible uses of their bank accounts or credit cards.
At the same time, they're trying to learn how the information got out there. So far, officials say there is no evidence any of the data has been used illegally. Seven suspects in a domestic terrorism plot are being held without bond in Miami. Federal prosecutors say they plan to bomb government buildings in Miami and the Sears Tower in Chicago. But as CBS News correspondent Jim Acosta reports, there was no imminent threat.
While the men are accused of taking pictures of their targets, other details from the indictment sound less like al-Qaeda and more like Keystone Qaeda. Consider the request that alleged ringleader made to the informant: a digital video camera, a rental car, and military boots, even providing the group's shoe sizes. Relatives of the suspects maintain they're innocent.
Ever heard your brother mention Osama bin Laden?
Never.
Al-Qaeda?
Never. Never. I don't even know what al-Qaeda is. I don't even know how to spell it.
In court today, several suspects said they were unemployed and had neither a checking nor savings account. That kind of poverty, say residents in this neighborhood, could be what led these men astray.
The Bush administration strongly defends an anti-terrorism program that monitors overseas bank transactions.
Let me tell you why this is important. It works.
White House spokesman Tony Snow.
The program has been tracing transactions of people suspected of having ties to al-Qaeda. Routine transactions confined to this country generally not in the database.
Treasury Secretary John Snow accused three major newspapers of helping the terrorists by publishing stories about the program, and Vice President Cheney says they've made it more difficult for us to prevent future attacks. But Democratic Congressman Ed Markey of Massachusetts accuses President Bush of violating the Constitution.
It is central to the identity of every American family that their financial records are not compromised unless there is a legally obtained warrant.
Norman Mineta is the longest-serving transportation secretary. He's also the only Democrat in President Bush's cabinet. But now, at age 74, the former California congressman has decided to move on. His resignation is effective July 7th. It was Mineta who grounded all planes on 9/11. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Doesn't anything inspire you?
Pizza.
I should have listened to my mother.
It's the Color Inspiration Sale at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Now you can save 20% a gallon on a wide variety of interior and exterior paints and stains. It's great savings on the high-quality products you want. For painting and decorating, ask how, ask now.
Ask Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com.
Aflac for Small Business, how can I help you?
Yeah, you cover small business?
Yes, we do.
Great, because I'm an ant.
Okay.
I got a tunneling business. You dig?
How many employees?
Well, it's a family-run business, just me and my, my aunt.
Well, with Aflac for Small Business, you can enjoy a lot of the benefits of a big business.
Great.
Just call 1-800-99-AFLAC.
Did that.
Or go to AflacSB.com. Aflac for Small Business. Because small business needs...
Aflac!
Too.
Gotta run. Company picnic.
American Family Life Assurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
All our clocks are synchronized, we're on time and under budget, ready for another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. Hey, it's 6 minutes past the hour. I'm glad you're listening. Every week we make time to talk with Scott Dick. He served in the Army, retired as a major. Also was a Marine prior to that, and he joins us to talk about military and veterans affairs. There's no shortage this week. Scott, I learned that you're going to get some free credit checking as a result of the fact that your Veterans Administration data was on that laptop or hard drive that got stolen in Washington.
Yeah, that's great news, Peter.
I can tell you're thrilled. We just heard during the top of the hour report, another group, some 28,000 members of the United States Navy, have had their data compromised. So it's quite a trend, isn't it?
Well, if their data was already compromised by the VA, what's one more? What is that, a compromission? What's one more? I mean, they should be getting used to it by now.
Yeah. Well, I guess this is more active duty people involved in the latest batch. Now, one of the things that you have discovered is an explanation for why more and more of America's soldiers and troops are electing to re-up for another tour of duty in Iraq. It must be the noble cause that they're engaged in.
Yes, indeed, Pete. I mean, that's what the administration says. It says that our troops, our National Guard, our reservists, our Navy that's serving as soldiers on the ground, and the Air Force that are serving as soldiers on the ground, all have stayed the course. They haven't cut and run because they're body and soul behind this movement. Or it could be that in fiscal year 05 they paid out $491 million worth of cash bonuses that are tax-free, by the way.
Wow, $490 million?
Yeah, let's put this in perspective. In 01, before the, in whatever you call this, an Iraq thing we're doing here,
yes,
besides dying, was $109 million. Fiscal year 02 was $127 million. 03 was $112 million. 04, now it starts to get ratcheted up, $223 million. But in 05, we're talking troops on their third and fourth tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, and $491 million.
Wow.
And also, Peter, by the way, they're getting, I think, desperate. They're offering $2,500 bonuses to Air Force and Naval officers who agree to go to just a change in service. Now, they've always allowed that. You could always do that, just change services when your contract was up. but they've never offered bonuses for it. In fact, they always cut you in rank, and they cut your pay, and they actually went through a sort of a hazing deal through your old commands to your new commands. But now they're taking it, one, it's retroactive, and they're paying it in a lump sum bonus after the officer arrives at their next Army military station. So they're starting to dip into the Air Force and Navy pool.
That's amazing.
It is very amazing.
Now, there are a couple of other things that surfaced in the fine print of the new $94, $95 billion supplemental authorization to keep the war machine in Iraq underway. We're now spending about $2.5 billion a week, roughly $10 billion a month. One of the things that I've heard about recently, Scott, is that the amount of money that we've paid out in bereavement payments to civilians in Iraq who, you know, are collateral damage, people who got killed, you know, either through some of these atrocities that have been reported or through various incidents that don't rise to the level of murder or anything illegal. And the amount of money typically given is about $2,500 per person. And I saw a report recently that the amount allocated last year in Anbar province primarily was about $19 million. And if you do the math on that, the number of Iraqi civilians who've been killed is much larger than what we acknowledge.
That's amazing. You know, those kind of bereavement payments are used in a culture where that's a common thing. So if there's an accident and you're at fault and a person dies, then part of your atonement is to pay a bereavement payment. That's very common. And the military does that if, you know, if they're somebody's driving a 5-ton truck and the brakes go out and they smash it to a car and somebody dies, then that's common. But they're, now it's a combat zone. So what I read and saw is they're also paying that for this collateral damage. You know, accidents and those kind of things I understand, but when you wrongly attack a house, kick in the doors and shoot somebody and you're like, oh, sorry, wrong neighborhood, it's appalling to me.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Yeah, it really is. Hey, Scott, before we move on, was there anything else in the supplemental that you wanted to mention?
Well, the supplemental, you know, the Republicans talk big about supporting the troops, but as a result, when it finally passed, it was cut $1.9 billion. For what? They shifted the money over to provide border security, including $708 million to pay for the deployment of National Guard to the Mexican border. And we already talked about this, Peter. They're not doing anything except keeping chairs warm with their butts.
Oh, no, no, no. They're working on trucks and maintenance.
That's pretty expensive. They could probably contract it out to Halliburton with a no-bid contract for cheaper than that.
Yes, they could. Yes, they could.
But that
raises a quick question that a caller asked me yesterday, and I promised to consult you on it. He wanted to know if any National Guard troops were actually deployed to Vietnam. And I didn't think so, but I couldn't say definitively.
I think there were Air National Guard troops employed. And I think some of the higher-skilled National Guard, they're probably federalized and sent over there. I can't say for sure. But I know that there was Air National Guard units operating there.
Okay. Well, glad I remembered to ask that. Go
now,
ahead.
Now, Peter, there's another subject we've talked about. And we know that the Republican administration has come up and said there are no permanent bases being planned in Iraq. Remember all that? And then we said, okay, there's long. Then they came out and said, well, there's no permanent, but there's some long-term bases. Remember?
Enduring, yes.
And we got a giggle out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things that was omitted from the final supplemental was a restriction that had been included in both versions, House and Senate,
right,
that would prohibit the U.S. military from setting up permanent bases in Iraq without congressional approval.
Well, indeed, and we talked about that a little bit last week when I was originating from Washington, because I saw Congresswoman Barbara Lee, the Democrat from Oakland, who sponsored the House version that you referred to that had bipartisan support, maybe even was unanimous. I can't recall specifically. But her version and the Senate version were nearly identical. And you know how it works. When a Senate version and a House version are different, they go to a conference committee and they negotiate out the differences.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here the measures were virtually identical. It went to conference and disappeared.
So I'm quoting her now. She said, if there are no plans for a permanent military presence, as the president and the defense secretary have repeatedly declared, then why in the world did the Republican leadership strike this provision?
And that is the lingering question that we'll probably never get an answer to.
That's the $64 billion question. And now one more thing. This is the Republican administration that says they support the troops and the veterans are their key, and we're going to get credit protection for a year, Peter. So that, you know, they really support the veterans. Yet they took out $430 million in veterans health care that was aimed at improving mental health coverage and transition assistance. Mm.
That's shameful. It really is.
And they're going to point to the billion that they added for the VA, but that's the VA hurricane recovery efforts. It has nothing to do with our troops coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan.
That's amazing.
It is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and we have Cher traipsing around the country now talking about helmets and other protective gear for our troops in Iraq. It's really sad that she has to end up being some sort of an advocate or lightning rod on issues like that.
It's appalling. That helmet issue, apparently that the Marine Corps, you would think that all the helmets were generic and they were the same. But, oh, no, we don't buy like that. We send out a 360-page military specification and get contractors to bid on it, and then we accept whatever company makes it, manufactures. That's the problem we had the vest, and they were coming from different manufacturers with different specifications.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that with the helmets, and apparently the helmets that the Marine Corps is using are not as good as the Army, and so she was asking why.
And when Cher has to ask why, we're in deep doo-doo, Scott.
That is a fact.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, we're going to talk about the latest military action in Afghanistan. Things are heating up there. The Taliban is not vanquished, as many Americans have believed. We'll talk about that, and we'll also talk about the string of atrocities by and against American forces in occupied Iraq. That's coming up as we continue with Scott Dick, our contributor on military and veterans affairs. You're welcome to join us with a question or comment, 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast, or call me toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. 16 minutes after the hour, you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop. KRXA 540 checks the Friday afternoon commute. Here's Metro Traffic's Amy Knight.
A little bit of sailing out on Highway 101 this afternoon if you're traveling on southbound 101 just before Bernal Road. Watch out for an anchor in the two left lanes. Drive with caution there. Once you pass that, south 101 after San Martin Avenue, a two-car crash in the center divide. Further down, south 101 just before 129, getting reports of an accident involving a motorhome and a big rig that's off to the right-hand shoulder. We're waiting for a big rig tow truck to arrive on scene. And Highway 152 at Casa de Fruta, two cars off to the right-hand shoulder there. Highway Patrol is on the way. This report brought to you by Centrum. When it comes to multivitamins, it's not just the number of ingredients, but how they interact that counts. Centrum balances combinations of nutrients to bring out their full potential. Centrum is balanced and complete. Amy Knight with traffic on KRXA 540.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and if you recognize this theme music, the Surgeon General has determined that smoking is hazardous to your health. We continue our weekly military debriefing with Scott Dick. He's our contributor on military and veterans affairs. Lines are open if you'd like to talk with us, 831-899-5792 or toll-free 1-888-579-2540. And, Scott, yesterday I had an interesting conversation with an expatriate of Afghanistan. Her name is Asma Eshin, and she runs a group. It's a relief group of American Afghans or Afghan Americans called AfghansForTomorrow.com. It was very interesting to talk with her. First of all, I asked her if the government of Hamid Karzai is a democracy, and it caused her to giggle. And she said, oh, no, maybe someday, but we don't have anything like that right now. And one of the things I pointed out to her, which I learned from the Pacifica radio program called Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman's show, she had a live report from a journalist in Afghanistan the other day. And he says that over the last 5 months, there have been more American bombing raids over Afghanistan than the number over Iraq. And I think that's surprising to many Americans because our media pretty much has Afghanistan off of the coverage radar. But the violence there continues in pretty significant ways.
Well, if you listen to the senior Republican leadership, we won the war in Afghanistan already and a mission accomplished. So now we just have to transition it over to NATO.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and in the book Cobra 2, they point out that the original plan was the Afghan plan, which was we go in, we topple the existing government, we plug in one that's friendly to us, and then we get out of there and don't really take responsibility for that ugly nation-building process. That apparently was the plan for Iraq. Of course, that plan changed. They just never really admitted it.
But it sort of fell through, right?
Yeah.
Peter, I want people to understand is that every time there's a bombing mission, it's because there's normally an engagement on the ground. They just don't bomb parts of Afghanistan for fun. So airborne artillery is what aircraft is.
Yeah.
And it was always designed to be that way. So anytime there's somebody making a bombing run, it's because it's the fastest, easiest way to get artillery to the point of the battle. So somebody's engaged in a land battle.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the Taliban has been pretty active. Militants bombed two coalition convoys in southern Afghanistan on Tuesday, killing a civilian, wounding 13, including six Canadian soldiers. Violence has increased sharply in Afghanistan in recent weeks. This is according to the New York Times yesterday, by the way. As suspected, Taliban insurgents have appeared in large numbers across the south and east, attacking government and foreign forces. And, of course, the U.S. has fewer than 15,000 troops on the ground in Afghanistan right now.
And they're going to continue to roll back the American presence as they switch to NATO. I know they pulled the Marines out or in the process of pulling them out. And then when they get to the Army, it'll be a few, a majority of special forces with support troops, and then they'll pull those out, and then NATO will move in. And NATO is a huge compromise. I don't want anybody to think that NATO has the combat capacity or capability that the American armed forces do. And that's not a slam against the NATO countries. It's the way they've designed their checkbook.
Mm-hmm. And so how will this transition work, as far as you know?
Well, transitions are inherently dangerous operations when you have one position at any level, Peter. Whether it's a man in the foxhole, a team in a position, a battalion, whatever level, transitions are inherently dangerous. And you have to reestablish all your communications line. You have to reestablish where the hazards are. You have a brand new team trying to get to know the ground, the geography, and the people there, and who the bad guys are. So it could be done two ways. One, it'll be a long transition with the military staying on the shoulders of the NATO forces until they're good and ready. Or it could be very short. They come and they say, here's your positions, have a great day. Hmm. And then they move. They leave. And so the Taliban seems to be positioning themselves so they'll be ready for the reoccupying terrain and reposition themselves so they'll be ready for the NATO transition. It'll be a much easier deal for the Taliban then.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Ayman Zawahiri, who we've mentioned, the number two in al-Qaeda, has issued a couple of videotapes. One now acknowledges the death of Zarqawi in Iraq, but they're amping up their attention at Afghanistan as well. Zawahiri earlier this week in a videotape, I am calling upon Muslims in Kabul in particular and in all Afghanistan in general, and for the sake of God, to stand up in an honest stand in the face of the infidel forces that are invading Muslim lands. And that one was broadcast on Thursday by Al Jazeera. He's been pretty busy with the videotapes, and the one that came out today has much higher production values. They apparently got some video editing gear in the cave.
Or they just used their satellite uplink to someplace else, had it contracted out, and then pulled it down, and then released it.
I would guess Dubai would be a place where they could feed their signal and get it upgraded before it went out on Al Jazeera.
You know, Peter, this is one of the things that frustrates me about Americans is that somebody once said that war is God's way of teaching Americans geography. And we have a terrible, terrible habit of underestimating the enemy. And I know I've described before on your show and other venues how the American military had planned to do a radio drop before we went into Bosnia, and everybody laughed because everybody, even though there was no electricity, everybody was watching TV. And when they refused to translate the data agreement, the Dayton agreement, into Cyrillic, the Bosnian Serbs got a copy. They downloaded it from the internet. So we are constantly reinforcing these dumb, stupid things that we do by imagining that somehow the Afghanis and al-Qaeda in Iraq are not technically sophisticated. They keep proving that themselves over and over again, especially in Iraq with the IEDs. You know, their cell phone activated, it shows some of the devices are very sophisticated.
Well, and I have to say that in terms of media manipulation, the al-Qaeda folks have gotten pretty good at that. Zarqawi's claim to fame was, you know, the beheading broadcast on the Internet of American contractors. And Zawahiri seems to have developed some pretty good skills, particularly in addressing the Muslim part of the world.
And this is where I have a real mixed emotions that they should do something to stop this, because it's a huge weapon and it's very effective. And in the long term, it's not the media that's going to lose this. It's going to be just this constant drumbeat of casualties along with the question, what are we doing there?
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to take a break, and when we return with Scott Dick, we'll continue our discussion of military and veterans issues. You're welcome to join us, 888-579-2540, toll-free, or on the Central Coast, a local call at 831-899-5792. Coming up next, I want to talk about the various atrocities in Iraq, some committed against American forces, and some, we're learning, committed by American forces. That's next here. If you'd like to find out more, get links to our archived programs, just go to peterbcollins.com. You can send me an email there, too. We'll continue in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Doesn't your Volvo deserve to be maintained and repaired by the best? Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is locally owned and operated by Mike Brooks and Tracy Polacco. Tracy is a factory-trained Volvo service advisor. Mike is a factory-trained and certified Volvo technician with over 17 years of experience servicing and repairing Volvos. Join the many Monterey Bay Volvo owners who only trust Hans Auto Repair to service their Volvos. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside. Call Hans at 583-9820. That's 583-9820.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones, everything so tasty you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a killer affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. MPG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey. PG.
Join R.J. Moyer for his weekend show About College Funding this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540. Sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
Hi, I'm Joan Kenley with Talking Matters. This Saturday at 3 on KRXA 540, we have a timely show about using and growing your intuition. World-famous author Sharon Frankamont and her daughter Megan will tell you just how to expand the way you intuit your life. This conversation and the good ideas will touch your mind, body, heart, and soul. Willis Harmon of Noetic Sciences said, "Intuition invites us into the center of our lives. Our show will invite you to go to your center. Here's Sharon's four simple steps for developing your intuition and the way Megan uses physical and emotional intuitive clues to make important decisions. Keep listening. We'll keep talking. My shows are archived on joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y. Don't miss our program on Using and Growing Your Intuition on Talking Matters this Saturday at 3.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to the designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience. I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show and our weekly visit with Scott Dick, our contributor on military and veterans affairs. If you're currently in uniform or you have served, you're especially welcome to offer your comments. You can join us on the Central Coast, a local call at 831-899-5792, or toll free from anywhere else within the sound of my voice. It's 1-888-579-2540.
And Scott, this has been a very difficult week in Iraq. Let's start off with what happened about a week ago. Two U.S. soldiers were accosted at a checkpoint. There apparently was diversionary activity by the enemy, and they were split off from their comrades, kidnapped, and apparently they were brutalized, tortured, and beheaded. And then their bodies were planted in an area that was booby-trapped to make it much more difficult and deadly for other forces to locate them. And we presume that this is an atrocious response to our snuffing of al-Zarqawi. And I just want to get your thoughts on this, because I recognize how painful it is for average Americans, and particularly the families of these service members, to learn of the way in which they were killed. In the big picture, though, I feel that we need to acknowledge that we have set a very low level in terms of our own ethics in the battlefield, and that Abu Ghraib is there as a reminder to many Iraqis and to some of the foreign fighters and others who have been attracted to this war zone, that they feel no sense of control or I'm trying to come up with the right word here, but they feel like they can do anything in a ruthless manner because they feel that our invasion and occupation has been similarly ruthless.
Well, this is a classic tactic, Peter. It's designed more for domestic consumption than it is for the troops' consumption. And the troops now, if they haven't had a wake-up call before about staying on their guard, then this certainly has to generate some kind of heat and light both for commanders. The questions they're asking is, why were these two isolated? Why weren't there anybody else? When I was in Bosnia, there was no real threat. We couldn't go out in less than a four-vehicle convoy.
Mm-hmm.
So to be isolated at a checkpoint, I don't understand it. I don't know, I'm going to point the finger at, I'm going to be an armchair quarterback and point the finger at their leadership. No matter what the diversion was, these guys shouldn't have been out there by themselves. The second thing, how many Iraqis' bodies did they find there as well? Now, Peter, this points to another story. There was a Marine sniper team killed in 04. All four of them killed in the middle of the night. And there were no Iraqi bodies as well. There was it just seemed like it was purposeful, it was planned, and somehow those guys let the guard down.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I jumped ahead because I wanted to come back to the issue of NATO moving into Afghanistan and ask you to tell us about your experiences with NATO in the Balkans, and then we'll come back to the situation in Iraq. Go ahead, Scott.
Well, NATO has always been a concern, and the EU has something called the WEU, which is the Western European Union, which was the military arm of the common market. They actually have a sort of of which the United States is not a member. And they were always trying to come up with a strategy, and of course then the French and the Brits would get together, and the Germans, they'd make these combined brigades. The issue is they have no strategic lift, and they were limited only not by their imagination, but by what their governments were willing to write checks for.
Mm-hmm.
So they were sort of always this ineffective second cousin, redheaded stepchild to NATO. But NATO was 16 countries, they operate together by agreement, and they, barring an attack on one with some limitations, for example, because Spain has two cities on the coast of Africa, any fight between Morocco and Spain over those cities doesn't include NATO. So they have these outs, these built-in outs, for they don't want us to get in a big war over these two disputed towns, for example.
So they have their own turf that's off limits to NATO.
And each country has separate kind of deals going on this way. Iceland has no military force; it has a police force, and it's just six. When it was 16 countries, you can imagine that committee was much smaller. Now, what are we talking about? 26? Oh, and the other thing, Peter, I forgot to tell you is that countries that were tasked to provide support for an operation, let's use Bosnia as an example, or the UN peacekeeping, and they reached into NATO assets. They could pay to have another country take their position.
Oh, really?
So richer countries could always employ countries that needed the money. UN peacekeeping missions are big cash cows for governments like Pakistan and other countries that don't have big bank accounts, because the UN pays them. They pay them like government contractors. They pay hundreds of dollars per soldier, and the soldier gets $2 a day or something like that.
Holy cow.
So there's a whole racket going on here.
And what is your sense about this impending deployment of NATO peacekeeping troops to Afghanistan, given the tactics of the Taliban, the way the warlords control the northern portions of the country? What do you expect they'll do when they get to Kabul?
Well, I expect them to hunker down. And the reason is, Peter, is that most of these overseas deployments, unless the country is completely behind it, are filled, those brigades and battalions are filled with volunteers. And they're not like our volunteers. These are guys who, they say, anybody want to go to Afghanistan? And they raise their hand, yes, and they put them together with units with leadership coming from this side and troops coming from that side and fillers. And my fear is that they're not going to be, the NATO troops are not going to be aggressive. They're going to look after their turf. And as we know, the some countries, their militaries are much, much weaker than other countries. And it's a leadership issue. And the Dutch, during the UN mission in Bosnia, proved that when they actually, not intentionally, but did anyway, because they didn't stand up to the Bosnian Serbs, they helped the Serbs at Srebrenica.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not too encouraging.
No, and the you have the Swedes, however, and the Danes, that the battalion commanders that moved into Bosnia, for example, the Serbs would shell them. And the tankers, those guys were tankers, they just opened fire on Serb positions. And the Serbs were shocked because no other UN troops had reacted that way. And so guess what? The Danes were left alone. So we do. There are some countries that have surprisingly effective military. I've worked with the Danes and the Swedes. Surprising military forces you'd never suspect.
No, I would never suspect either Denmark or Sweden to have aggressive forces.
They were not taking any, from the Bosnian Serbs during their mission. They came home, I think, with everybody or one or two. Maybe they were mine hits. But as far as being shelled and harassed and bothered and, you know, their convoys being interfered with by the Bosnian Serbs, that didn't happen with the Danes and the Serbs, or a fraction of what other countries. Didn't happen with the Brits either.
Yeah.
So the Brits are doing a pretty good job under this coalition umbrella, but how big of a force are they going to have employed under NATO? And then how will they rotate those NATO forces into Afghanistan? Country takes a big hit. Will they pull their troops out and substitute somebody else? And as we get from richer country to poorer country in NATO, then how will that even get, how it'll decline even more is what I'm saying.
Well, I think that Afghanistan will be, in the news for several years to come, if not longer. And we can lay it at the feet of the Bush administration because they moved on to Iraq without finishing whatever the job was in Afghanistan. And for me, it was to, identify a location and capture Osama bin Laden and the other leaders of al-Qaeda. And the other is to stabilize the government there, because I do think it was beneficial to take out the Taliban. But to plug in Hamid Karzai and really just turn him into an American puppet who really only has control over the capital region near Kabul is not a successful strategy for the future.
It's not even a clever puppet. It's so obvious. It's so transparent.
Yeah, the Afghan woman I talked to yesterday was cute because she kind of mixed up who the employer was of Hamid Karzai before we plugged him in as the leader in Afghanistan. She said, yeah, he worked for the UNCOLA. And I said, oh, you mean UNICAL? She said, oh, yeah, that. Scott Dick with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And on the heels of the disclosures of the investigation into the situation at Haditha, which occurred last November 2005, we now have an incident surfacing from April of 2006, and 8 men have been charged in the death of an Iraqi civilian. They're members of the 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines, based at Camp Pendleton in Southern California. And, Scott, do you think that because Haditha kind of was the first to break open the whole idea of U.S. troops committing illegal acts and causing the deaths of civilians in the battle zone, do you think that this is just the first of a whole wave of reports we're going to see?
Well, we know that, didn't we talk about, Peter, I think last year, about how there have been 26 homicides committed by Army forces alone, and the CID. The only reason I call those homicides is because the Criminal Investigation Division of the Army, they have their own branch.
Mm-hmm.
Called them homicides, and no one's ever been punished for those.
Yeah.
So the Abu Ghraib, you know, we can lay that on the feet of untrained reservists and maybe some interrogation gone awry, but these kinds of killings are so counterproductive. It leads to it's you know, war is brutal, war is ugly, but I don't care what anybody says. There are rules of land warfare. And if you do if you're a bad guy and you do to our troops what happened last week, expect no quarter from them. Expect nobody to give up. And if our troops are even thinking about anything but fighting to their last bullet, they're nuts because they know what's going to happen to them. Mm-hmm. So then you have the brutality on one side. It just brings out more brutality. And if you have the emotions and the way that the Marine Corps builds cohesion between troops, I mean, I've seen fist fights between companies. There's so much competition. Mm. And to actually kill somebody in that unit, it's like killing somebody in your family. So there is and if you put that next to a sort of a relaxed look at law of land warfare, then, you know, it's not explainable, it's not excusable, but you can sort of look at what's happened and think, yeah, that doesn't seem impossible.
Congressman Murtha repeatedly, when he talks about Haditha and some of these other incidents, it clearly pains him to even, you know, acknowledge that these kinds of things do occur. And he attributes it to the stress, the repeated redeployment of troops, 3 and 4 tours for some of these guys, and, you know, just the general factors of their being in the middle of a shooting war, and that has to take a toll on their ability to function according to our standards.
Well, Peter, I don't think there's any precedent for 3 and 4 tours in a combat zone one after another. Even in World War II, when these guys were in for the duration, they pulled whole units out and moved them to quiet areas. As we know, the troops that were put in the Ardennes Forest in the battle just before the Battle of Bulge, they thought they were going to a quiet area. Mm-hmm. So there's precedence for taking troops out, getting them downtime, and what happens, these guys come back to the States, they're not sitting around eating bonbons and drinking mint juleps. They're constantly practicing their warcraft. They're moving. They're going to school. They're studying what happened, and they're getting ready to redeploy again. So calling a redeployment to the United States downtime or chance to give them to defuse is, I think, a complete misnomer. It's crap, basically. And some of these units coming back from Iraq go into the National Training Center rotational training cycle, which is a 24-hour a day, 7-day a week for a month, doing what they're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not using real bullets.
We're going to take a quick break and return with Scott Dick. There's room for your calls if you'd like to join us. 831-899-5792 or toll free 888-579-2540. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
DNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Post Graduate School and Lake El Estero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works. Hey, it's Sheila Gale from Reality Radio, just reminding you of our new time slot, 9 to 10 Saturday mornings on KRXA. We're your local progressive talk radio. We'll interview our homeless and our wealthiest, local celebrities, ordinary and extraordinary people. We keep it real here. So meet me Saturday morning right here, 9 to 10 on KRXA 540. I'm Sheila Gale, and together we're Reality Radio.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
KRXA 540 traffic time now. Here's Amy Knight.
Reports of an anchor in the roadway southbound 101 before Burnell Road, also south 1 at Morrissey Boulevard, two cars in the center divide, and Clubhouse at Plaza Tiempo. A vehicle struck a bicyclist. Test drive the new Audi 2007 Q7 4.2 SUV. Visit the Bay Area Audi dealer or BayAreaAudi.com for info. The Audi Q7, the newest luxury SUV in the industry. Amy Knight with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Amy. Hey, Scott Dick, what's on the Tasty Planet tomorrow at 1?
Tomorrow I have two entrepreneurs that are going to discuss a new format of a restaurant. You come there, you pick up the food according to their menu, then you take it home and cook it. And a travel agent. We're going to discuss all things travel again.
All right, that's tomorrow, Tasty Planet 1 to 3 on KRXA 540 with Scott Dick, your host. And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. I'm your humble host, Peter B. We continue with Scott Dick, retired from the Army as a major, and he contributes on military and veterans affairs. Scott, it was interesting to see as the United States Senate conducted a lengthy debate about the war in Iraq and voted down two resolutions, one setting a specific date for bringing the troops home and the other a more general piece of advice to the president. That got 39 votes, which is encouraging to a guy like me. But the president was globetrotting in Europe. He was in Vienna, where he held a news conference, and it was very interesting as European reporters informed him of the opinions of Europeans, according to polls over there, showing that they have very little confidence in this president and this administration. And most significantly, that over 80% of them in a recent poll said that the U.S. is contributing to instability in the world through its military actions in the Middle East. What's your reaction to the way the president performed on the road?
Well, first of all, Peter, I did a paper and a presentation 3 years ago on our global outlook, just because I thought it was interesting and I had an audience. And so I did some research and found out that in survey after survey in Asia, for example, the Japanese were calling the United States number one destabilizer, not North Korea. Mm. So the attitude is global. It's not just in Europe.
Yeah.
And the president calling comparing Iraq to Hungary was a little bit, that should send off all sorts of red flags for everybody in the United States, because the Hungarian Revolution, it only took 50 years for it to come of age.
Yeah, it was in 1956, and there was a revolt there. But it's really hard. I mean, you have to strain to compare what occurred there to what occurred in Iraq.
Well,
after all, the U.S. did not invade Hungary to support the aspirations of those who wanted freedom and democracy.
No, and the thing that's troubling about that whole thing that he just completely dismissed and didn't even bring up was that, you know, we didn't help the Hungarians. But for years before that event, we had been hammering Hungary with Radio Free Europe broadcasts and surreptitious print saying, if you rebel and revolt against the yoke of communists, we will help you. It
yep.
wasn't just a matter of the end when they were doing it that we were egging them on. We've been antagonizing them for probably since the Russians moved in to revolt and that we would help them. And then
mm-hmm.
we did nothing.
Yeah. We did the same thing in 1968 in Czechoslovakia.
Indeed. And they tried to claim, well, you know, Eisenhower's claim was that NATO was already destabilized because the French and Brits were going at it in the Suez. And he was, you know, fighting with the French and the Brits. He was going to ask them to invade. Well, you know, then we set the Hungarians up for a lot of death and destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the Iraqis.
Yeah. And it is interesting just to watch the video of the president hearing this information from a foreign reporter. And his body gets all uptight. His face gets that smirk on it. And he clearly was angry when he responded, used the term absurd several times, And what's interesting is he seemed to either be oblivious or just unable to process that the reporter was telling him about public opinion polls, and he made it sound like it was just one individual who had made the allegation, you know, that the U.S. had contributed to this instability in the world. And I guess he's just not used to hearing contrary points of view.
Well, who would bring him up? Our lapdog press? The press that's afraid to even do anything except hold themselves when he comes into a room, or his spokesman, Tony Snow? You know, he's shocked because actually somebody talked back to him or told him the truth, presented something that was unpopular. He didn't want to hear that.
Yeah.
And so he gets angry. Remember when that young Irish reporter took him to task in that interview? They complained to the Irish national government.
Yeah.
She weighed, like, 120 pounds? And he couldn't take her in an argument? I mean, give me a break. This is where I really got frustrated. These guys are such chicken hawks that they can order troops into combat, but they can't go toe-to-toe with the press?
Yeah.
I mean, really, Peter.
Now, let me ask you a question. A caller, a thoughtful gentleman, called in yesterday, and he was reacting to the way the Republicans in the Senate debate were on message and reading from a script, and every one of them who wanted to harangue the Democrats used the phrase cut and run. And he told me that cut and run is a Navy term that was describing a response to the detection of an enemy nearby. And instead of leaving a ship at anchor, where you're kind of a sitting duck or an obvious target, the idea was to cut your anchor line and run to a different position so that you would have strategic advantage over this advancing foe. Do you know that to be the case? Is cut and run an honored term from Navy parlance?
That I never experienced in the Marine Corps, but it makes sense because you run with the wind. That's the fastest way for a sailing ship to move.
Right.
Tacking, you know, is against the wind, and they could only do that since the invention of the new kind of sail. So cut and run would be you'd cut your anchor and then run with the wind to get away. It only works if you're, you know, downwind of the foe. Mm-hmm. But it makes sense.
Yeah.
What I was shocked about is the lies that the Republican, these otherwise gentlemen of the Senate, stand up on the floor and say that the weapons of mass destruction have been found.
Yeah, that's Rick Santorum.
I can't believe that nobody's taken him to task. The press isn't all over him. Nobody's all over him. Just like the intelligence agencies came out and said, no, those are from pre-91 war stocks. And then somebody else came out and said, no, they're not. Those are real weapons of mass destruction that if Al-Qaeda got them, they could be, like, shut up.
Yeah. Well, and every time these kinds of assertions are made, I have to hear from some of our conservative listeners, yes, Brian, about, see, they found the WMD. And that makes me a liar and Bush a truth teller. And I'm sorry, you can spin and torture this information as much as possible. But let us be very clear. To date, no weapons of mass destruction that were active or usable in any significant way against the U.S. military or anyone else have been discovered within the boundaries of the nation of Iraq.
And Peter, they had a special unit comprised of special operators and CIA special operators that spent over $24 million crisscrossing the country of Iraq to find those weapons, and they did it for 2 long years before they all finally put up their hands and said, guess what, there ain't none.
My only quibble with what you just said is I think the figure of the amount of money they spent approached $1 billion.
Oh, well, see, that makes my head swoon, and I can't even get my, you know, it's impossible for me to imagine that they went on that wild goose chase.
Yeah. We got time for a quick call. Somebody's on line one. Hello, line one. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi. Go right ahead,
hey,
sir.
It's Frank from Marina.
Peter. Oh, hi, Frank.
Called you at the last minute last night.
Yep, and just a minute here, so go right ahead.
You want me to wait till after the break?
Nope.
For news?
Nope.
Okay.
Blurt it out.
All right. And when they say cut and run, how's this sound? I'll sum it up real quick. Surrender is forbidden. The Sixth Army will hold their positions to the last man and the last round, and by their heroic endurance will make an unforgettable contribution towards the establishment of a defensive front and the salvation of the Western world. Who said that?
That had to have been Hitler talking about this, either Stalingrad or one of those other big messes.
You got it, Scott.
Okay, Hitler's Frank, thanks for the call. We're out of time here today. Scott Dick, as always, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Peter. Great as always.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll continue in just a moment here. right on the Peter B. Collins Show. Visit my website, peterbcollins.com. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. It's happened again. Sensitive personal information on military personnel has been compromised, this time by being posted on the Internet. The Navy says the names, birthdates, and Social Security numbers of 28,000 sailors and their families were made public, possibly on a subcontractor's website.
We're investigating who had the information, why it was posted there. We asked them to take the information off their site, and we are identifying the people whose information was on the site to let them know that it was there.
Commander Lydia Robertson says there's no evidence the data has been used illegally, but those affected are urged to check their bank and credit card statements. CBS News correspondent David Martin reports it was the Navy's Office of Personnel that detected the security breach.
This was discovered by a routine trawling of the Internet looking for compromises of either private or classified information.
Earlier, the Pentagon acknowledged that information on 2.2 million active duty National Guard and Reserve troops had been stolen, and the Veterans Affairs Department said data on some 17 million vets was lost in a burglary. Here he is again. Osama bin Laden's right-hand man, Ayman al-Zawahiri, appears on a videotape message for the second time this week. This latest tape is a reaction to the killing of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq. Zawahiri says his death will not set back the insurgency. Brian Jenkins of the RAND Corporation says these messages are an important part of the strategy for al-Qaeda's leaders in hiding.
The communication simply show evidence that this is an important part of their overall campaign.
The al-Zawahiri tape released earlier this week was apparently made before Zarqawi's death. Federal authorities offered details today on the charges against seven Miami men accused of plotting terrorist bombings there and at the Sears Tower in Chicago. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports.
There was no imminent threat, FBI Deputy Director John Pistol says.
In terms of the plans, it was more aspirational than operational.
In fact, the indictment says that a month ago, the alleged ringleader admitted he was experiencing delays because of various problems with his organization. Nevertheless, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez says the group did take steps to organize an attack, seeking weapons, uniforms, vehicles, and $50,000 cash.
We clearly believe there's sufficient information, sufficient facts, to support this prosecution.
Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Vice President Cheney says he's offended that major newspapers would publish details of a secret anti-terrorism program. The New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, and the Wall Street Journal revealed that the Treasury Department has been monitoring international bank transactions in an effort to choke off funding for terrorists. The Bush administration says the program is effective and insists there are safeguards to protect Americans' privacy. The Dow down 30 points. This is CBS News.
You trust your car to take you places this summer. So who do you trust to take care of your car? Sears Auto Centers. Full-service car care, bumper to bumper. From diehard batteries to all the top tire brands, even on Sundays. All backed with a national guarantee of satisfaction. And right now it's our biggest Michelin tire sale of the year, with Michelin tires at the lowest prices of the season. You're going places this summer. Make sure your car is going to the place that protects it best. Sears Auto Centers. See store for guarantee details. Exclusions apply. CLN 7806.
Where do you want to be?
I'll bet you a dollar if we look on Remax.com, we'll just find Remax listings.
I bet you're wrong.
Okay, let's see.
Remax, Remax, somebody else, somebody else.
Looks like all the listings to me.
Why would Remax do that?
To give us consumers what we want.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, way cool.
Just like you.
Yeah, thanks, but you still owe me a dollar.
Find your perfect place. It's easier than ever at Remax.com. Nobody sells more real estate than Remax. Each office independently owned and operated.
Government weather experts have issued some lightning guidelines debunking the notion that cell phones attract lightning.
I'm Lou Maligano. It's when thunder roars, go indoors, not hang up the cell phone. John Jensenius at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
People are struck because they're in the wrong place at the wrong time, and the wrong place is anywhere outside. Wrong time is any time a thunderstorm is nearby.
Putting to rest warnings from British doctors against using cell phones in the rain. Jensenia says nothing attracts lightning. Lightning seeks the taller objects.
A suspected terrorist ring wasn't the only excitement in Miami today. An estimated 250,000 fans turned out to celebrate the Miami Heat's NBA championship. Shaquille O'Neal led the cheers at an afternoon rally, encouraging Alonzo Mourning to decide against retirement. He got the crowd to chant one more year, and he got coach Pat Riley to dance. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
The following is a message from Pfizer.
This is Dr. Drew Pinsky. Some of you may know me as Dr. Drew. Today's topic is men's sexual health. More specifically, performance problems. And we've got a brave guy on the line.
I don't know why I'm even calling, because it's not really an issue. It only happens every once in a while, like when I'm tired or stressed out, a little under the weather.
Just a guess, but are we talking about erectile dysfunction?
Oh, no, not ED. Just a very occasional little glitch. Yeah, I'd call it an erectile glitch.
Well, a lot of guys don't realize it, but ED may not happen all the time. It can be unpredictable.
Well, now that you mention it, I never know when it's going to happen.
And that's something you want to live with?
Good point. I'll talk to my doctor.
To learn more about ED and how to treat it, talk to your doctor or visit JustAskToday.com.
Peter B. Collins.
You've got the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm delighted you're listening. Coming up later this hour, his Bradness will join us, Brad Friedman, for our weekly soiree as we discuss California District 50 and the continuing questions about whether that was a secure election. Brad coming up in about 15 or 20 minutes. But first, it's time for our weekly visit with the guy who represents Surf City, USA. Yeah, summertime's here. People are heading to the beach in Santa Cruz. And John Laird is your assemblyman and the chair of the Assembly Budget Committee. He joins us again this afternoon. Hello, John.
Hey, Peter. Great to be with you.
Nice to talk with you. Are you a surfer at all?
Not really. Just the internet.
It's safer that way. Much easier to hang 10. Well, the budget battle continues. Just 2 weeks ago, you were quite optimistic that the budget this year might actually be completed on time. And last week we discussed the wrangling over the insurance program for young people in California and the Republican opposition to the coverage of the children of undocumented residents of this state. Where do things stand right now? I understand that the Democratic leadership has taken that issue off the table and is planning to use a separate bill to try to achieve the same goal?
Well, we've taken part of the issue off the table. We took what we wanted to do to ensure all kids in the second and the third year out from the budget, and we can pass that with a simple majority bill and enact it. But we're still hoping the governor holds firm with the people of his own party on the money he put in this year's budget to keep afloat the 18 counties that insure all kids for health care now. And he's been under big attack from the Republicans in the legislature for that, and we're trying to just give him the backbone to stick up for that, because that is a key part of the entire plan, is to shore up the counties that do it now and then move to universal coverage statewide 2 and 3 years out in the budget.
Mm-hmm. And politically, this is a difficult dance because you certainly have to be conscious that this governor wants to be reelected in November, and the extent to which you help him look good hurts Phil Angelides' chances of taking over the governor's seat. On the other hand, you have important goals that you want to achieve, and you need to work with the governor to get past the Republican opposition.
I think in that circumstance, we just have to do what the right thing is public policy-wise. And interestingly, there's two polls out in the last few days. One I've seen and the other I haven't but have heard about. And in each case, they're identical in the governor's race. They declare it a 43-43 dead heat right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting. If it's a dead heat going in with everything that happened to Phil Angelides, it means the governor's not climbing out of his political hole from last year, and that Phil is doing better than people thought coming out of the primary. But the other thing it means is that the logical weakness of the governor in that case, he either stands up to his party or looks weak in the face of this party, and I think he actually faces a difficult choice in dealing with children's health care because he doesn't necessarily win either way. If he does the right thing, which is making sure all kids are insured, he actually keeps his own base a little angry and might deflect voter turnout. So I don't think the obvious is really that obvious in terms of if he moves away from the strong conservative base of his party, it necessarily helps him. It just keeps him in a box where he's in trouble.
And the governor's campaign team, borrowed from the White House, is doing some interesting things. They waited 4 days after the Democratic primary to begin attacking candidate Angelides, and they're apparently going to continue this air attack of negative ads and try to tar him with the what was an unfair charge from Steve Wesley, his primary opponent, that Angelides has proposed raising taxes by $10 billion. But it seems that this is my analysis, tell me what you think, that the Schwarzenegger team is doing this because they seem to recognize that they are at a max point in terms of the governor's positives, particularly toward non-Republicans, toward decline to state voters and any possible Democrats who might cross over in November. And so recognizing that he's at max positive, the way to win the race is to drive up Angelides' negatives.
I think that you're right. And, you know, one of the polls I was talking about had his approval rating at 39 and his disapproval at 47. And if you're a governor that's an incumbent and having those ratings, your only hope is to just do negative things on your opponent. But that could have an unintended consequence, and the unintended consequence is it could depress voter turnout. And I think that there is such a lack of enthusiasm, even among a lot of core Republicans, for where the governor is, that depressing turnout doesn't work to his advantage. And so it's a dangerous strategy, even though I think at this point it might be his only one.
Yeah. So what are the current obstacles to completing a budget and turning it over to the governor?
I think it's still that children's health issue. It's that the governor wants to spend more on public safety programs than the legislature, and I think even some of the legislative Republicans want to. And both legislative Democrats and Republicans want to stick to a revised form of school funding that gives much more local control. And I think the governor wants to stick to his original programs, which do mandates from the state level, albeit for some positive things, and not give the local control and the school money. And I think it's just working out those final three issues. And my guess is since the fiscal year starts next week, at the end of next week,
mm-hmm.
that will finally be the pressure that should force people to come to an agreement on a budget early next week. So I believe the minute June 15th passed, it sort of advances that as the next pressure point.
Mm-hmm. John Laird with us, the Assembly Budget Chair, Democrat Assemblyman from Santa Cruz here on the Peter B. Collins Show. John, the other thing I want to ask you about is the San Francisco Chronicle published a lengthy article this week about the changed relationship that the government has, or the governor, I'm sorry, the way he has changed his posture regarding the Department of Corrections. And, you know, he voluntarily changed the name to Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. That's something that I salute. But he has backed off from the rehabilitation part of his agenda, and he has reportedly cozied up to the CCPOA. That is the California Correctional Peace Officers Association, a very powerful labor union. And I'm a labor guy, and I have to say that they routinely cross the line, in my view, in advancing their own ideas about public policy, only to the extent that they benefit the members of that union by increasing wages and providing job security at the prisons here in California.
Well, it's been a very interesting thing, and what happened is yesterday a report was released by the special master under the federal takeover of prison health care, and the federal master attacked the governor on that basis. And it was, he began his term by taking a strong position, not just changing the name, but putting people in that he thought would stand up to the union and would try to take control of the system that was out of control. Because when he took over, the prison system hadn't even entered the state budget into the books, and they were spending at the previous level despite cuts, and they were running $500 million in the red statewide. And he put all the wardens through financial management training. He threatened to fire them if they ran over their budgets. He was going to stand up to the union. He hired a couple of in succession tough leaders, and they each quit, saying he was cozying up to the union. The special master said it, and I detected the influence of Susan Kennedy, who was in the Gray Davis administration when there was a similar coziness. Mm-hmm. And yet I know that privately, I don't think they've totally abandoned their desire to contract out some prison services, which are anathema to any labor person, CCPOA or not. Mm-hmm. And it's really unclear where they're going with all this. This could be an issue that comes to the fore in the budget in the next few days. So it's really interesting to me, and the CCPOA is sitting on $10 million of a political action campaign fund.
Well, and the most recent resignation was Jeannie Woodford, who had been promoted to running the Department of Corrections and the cabinet-level office. And I know her from when she was the warden at San Quentin. And she was very cozy with the CCPOA there. Her brother or brother-in-law was the shop steward of the unit at San Quentin. So for her to resign after feeling undue interference from the CCPOA is extremely remarkable.
Exactly. And it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out in this election year. And I don't know the precise date, but their contract's coming up. And you know, I don't know where Phil Angelides is totally on this, but this is going to be a very interesting issue in the governor's race. And we walked a fine line in the budget because the federal court believes they could just court order money from the state for the prison stuff. And we're going to have a $1 billion cost in the next year on that alone.
Yeah. John Laird, thank you for your work. Thanks for joining us today.
Talk to you next week. Thanks.
Very good, sir. John Laird, Chair of the California Assembly Budget Committee. Coming up next, Brad Friedman joins us right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'm Dan Brown, President of At Your Service Premier Event Planning and Transportation. We specialize in events ranging from a two-person anniversary or 200 guests attending the great AT&T or the concourse. We have a fleet of sedans, limousines, vans, mini coaches, as well as vintage cars that make any event special. Weddings, wine tours, or corporate events, give us a call, 625-5363, or check us out on the web, MontereyLimos.com.
this week on Rock Rollin' Real Estate. Don't miss our special guest, Glenn Plantone. He'll be telling us about the hottest areas to invest in. Glenn has just returned from his second trip to Costa Rica to tell us about some amazing property there. Can you say mucho gusto? That's this Sunday at 10 a.m. Now heard from Big Sur to Eureka. Rock Rollin' Real Estate. Listen online at rockrollinrealestate.com. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
KRXA 540 takes a look at your traffic. 521 now on this Friday afternoon. Here's Amy Knight.
A new accident for Gilroy, South 101 at Monterey Street. A two-car collision in the center divide. A little bit of slowing in the area. Expect some delays as you exit off of 101 getting over to Highway 152 in Gilroy as well. Also in Santa Cruz, Clubhouse Drive at Plaza Tiempo, you'll find an accident involving a vehicle and a bicyclist. Minor injuries reported in that accident. Also in Aptos, southbound 1, just before Soquel Drive, the left lane is blocked. Injuries involved in this crash. Three cars there and traffic is backed up from Morrissey Boulevard in Santa Cruz. The Volkswagen Passat, lowest ego emissions of any German engine sedan. Stop by your local Volkswagen dealer today and take a joyride. Amy Knight with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Amy. We'll check back with you in about a half an hour.
Okay.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, rolling some stones your way. And here's a Rolling Stone who gathers absolutely no moss. His Bradness joins us now, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. And in the past week, he has not rested. He continues to raise attention about the election in the California primary that took place in District 50, that's San Diego County, the race between Francine Busby and Brian Bilbray. And you just keep on keeping on, don't you, Brad?
It is line in the sand time, brother, as far as I'm concerned. This is our last and best and really only hope between now and November to affect any real election reform. This is it, and it couldn't be clearer what the hell happened here.
Yeah. And let's imagine somebody's tuning in for the first time and hasn't heard any of our conversations since the June 6th primary.
Yeah.
The basic issues in this it was a special election to serve out the remainder of Duke Cunningham's term after he went to jail.
Right.
And it was very close. The day after the election, the published result was a 4,732-vote victory for Brian Bilbray.
Mm-hmm.
But you have declared no confidence, and you've been joined by a wide range of groups. We'll talk about the town halls that are coming up in just a few days. But describe what were the key problems with this election, Brad.
Well, really, the key point is this is the first election that we have had, the first federal election that we've had, since a host of vulnerabilities have now been found and confirmed in these particular Diebold voting machines, both optical scan and touchscreen, have been confirmed by the Secretary of State McPherson and his commission that he put in on this computer scientist at UC Berkeley. On the federal level, the body that looks into certification for these machines, they have all looked at what has been discovered specifically about these machines and essentially went into emergency session in both cases to say, okay, well, you can use these machines anyway, even though they don't comply with the federal or state standards, as long as you take these very specific security mitigation requirements, these specific steps. If you don't take them, then the machines are not certified for use. Well, this was the first time we had an election under these really emergency requirements. And guess what? They were not only not followed, but they were thrown out the window when the San Diego Registrar of Voters sent these machines home, the voting machines, Diebold, both optical scan and touchscreen, with poll workers, where they sat in cars and garages and everything else unsecurely for days and weeks just prior to the election. Now,
the machines just needed to bond with the election workers.
That's what it was, and their neighbors, and anybody else who wanted to walk by and go inside their garage or their car,
yeah,
and take 2 minutes, because that's all it takes, 2 minutes, to completely overwrite the software and everything else that's been programmed on there, no password necessary. And as David Jefferson, the secretary's own, the head of his own, what do they call it, voting system technology advisory board, as he has said on PBS NewsHour last week, that if you affect one machine, it can then infect all the other machines in the election, which is why both the feds and the state put in these very strict requirements about the security of these machines, and that once they are programmed, they are to remain secure, or else their certification is gone. Every machine, then, that was used in that San Diego election was not certified, and there can be no confidence in the results because of it. And if we don't do something now, then the signal sent is, it doesn't matter what the rules are, the laws are, the special emergency provisions put in place for these machines. It doesn't matter. Do whatever you want, election directors, and certification and the rules mean absolutely nothing.
Well, and again, we see that for the most part, these issues are being glossed over or unaddressed. Have you yet to get any response out of Secretary of State Bruce McPherson's office on District 50 in the June primary?
Well, I do know that they sent a memo to the legislature, the title of which, oh shoot, I don't have it in front of me, the title of which is No Problems in the June 6th Primary Elections, to which Deborah Bowen, by the way, has taken exception and written a letter to Bruce McPherson to ask about all of the problems that they've had. So other than that, though, they are trying to duck this every which way they can because they know we, frankly, have them dead to rights here. Their own
McPherson's office maintains there were no problems in any of the 58 counties of California on this primary day?
Yeah, boy, I wish I could find it. I'll try to find when we go to the break. I'll see if I can get the title of that memo, because I had it somewhere nearby here.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you know, it was along the lines of all went well in the June 6th election.
And was that a press release written by the Diebold Corporation?
Well, you know what? It may well have been, and I'm going to try to get it, because as we've learned recently, in fact, material that the Secretary of State's office has put out on their own stationery, it turns out, was specifically written by Diebold employees. When we checked the, you know, it was a Word document, for example, you can check the properties and you can see who was the original author. And in fact, one
just nice to know that when we outsourced our election process, we got a full service contract. Brad, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about your interesting encounter with right-wing radio talk show host Roger Hedgecock in San Diego. And we'll talk more about the organizations that have declared no confidence in the Bill Bray-Busby race June 6th. More in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Monta Vista Wine and Spirits in Monterey has everything you need, from high-end liquor to the very best in fine wines. It's the real deal. Family-owned for over 40 years, John will give you one-on-one personal attention, just like family. Have a special request? Not a problem. Open every day from 9 to 9. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is located on Soledad Drive in Monta Vista Village, near the Del Monte Center. Look for Doug Huckleberry, who greets you at the door. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits wants you to please drink responsibly.
Join R.J. Moyer for his weekend show about college funding this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and fun in the Monterey Bay area. I interview authors, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make Monterey and our region such a delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 AM from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
Hi, I'm Joan Kenley with Talking Matters. This Saturday at 3 on KRXA 540, we have a timely show about using and growing your intuition. World-famous author Sharon Frankamont and her daughter Megan will tell you just how to expand the way you intuit your life. This conversation and the good ideas will touch your mind, body, heart, and soul. Willis Harmon of Noetic Sciences said, "Intuition invites us into the center of our lives. Our show will invite you to go to your center. Here's Sharon's four simple steps for developing your intuition, and the way Megan uses physical and emotional intuitive clues to make important decisions. Keep listening. We'll keep talking. My shows are archived on joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y. Don't miss our program on using and growing your intuition on Talking Matters this Saturday at 3.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. It's 33 minutes past the hour. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Colors on the street, red, white, and blue.
Thank you, Neil. We'll keep on rocking in the free world. We continue with Brad Friedman. He runs the blog at bradblog.com, works on election issues, and joins us on the program every week. And, Brad, before the break, I mentioned that you had a very interesting encounter related to the no confidence that you've expressed and many others have joined you in regarding the election in District 50 in Southern California for the congressional seat that was vacated by the imprisoned Duke Cunningham. And I know a little bit about Roger Hedgecock. He's a former mayor of San Diego, an arch conservative. And while I've never been on his show or had him on my show, I did have an interesting encounter with him at a conference in San Diego about 6 or 8 years ago, where we had a, you know, an exchange in a hotel ballroom. And I found him to be kind of a right-wing demagogue, frankly.
A kind of? Yeah.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, he's a frequent host as well of Rush Limbaugh's show.
Mm-hmm.
He hosted it this morning, and I heard him mention something about Al-Qaeda hates America like most Democrats.
Mm.
That's the kind of fellow we're dealing with. So when I was invited to come on his show day before yesterday, you know, I always enjoy getting in there and mixing it up with the wingnuts.
Sure.
As a matter of fact, I think I may be the only person yet to have actually run Ann Coulter off of a off of a debate. She left halfway through a radio debate.
That's a real claim to fame, and you should relish it.
I am proud of that. That said, so I was loaded for bear when Hedgecock called. He's down there in San Diego, and you know, I've got my facts straight on this stuff, so I'm not a skier to these guys.
Mm-hmm.
To my surprise, Hedgecock was on board from the get-go. From the first word on, he completely agreed. And mind you, he's a big Bill Bray supporter.
Sure.
Big anti-immigrant guy, and Bill Bray was running on that against Busby down there.
Mm-hmm.
He was infuriated, I think is the best way to put it, about the way these elections are now being run. And I was delighted to be able to find at least a few moments of common ground with Roger Hedgecock on this, who I think honestly recognizes that, as I've said to you many times, this one is not a matter of right and left, it's a matter of right and wrong, and that our bedrock for this democracy, you know, the bedrock is the vote and being able to know that we have confidence in the system and the votes are counted accurately and fairly.
And if people would like to hear your entire exchange with Roger Hedgecock, they can go to bradblog.com where there's an MP3 file. And I'd like to play just the last 20 or 30 seconds of it.
Yeah.
As he gives you little air kisses on your your way out the figurative door.
Brad Friedman, bradfriedman.com, and his blog at bradblog.com. And again, very liberal left-wing guy, but I think he's onto something in this case. In fact, I know he is. And that is that we now have allowed a system of counting our votes to be presented to us as a system that does it accurately when it has manifestly been proven that it can be monkeyed with and the results tampered. It seems to me if we have any bedrock notion in this country, it ought to be that the votes ought to be fairly and fully counted. I just think that's... Wow, if we can't agree on that one, this country's farther down the division road than I think we are. All right, I'm Roger Hedgecock, 422 KOGO.
So there you go with a very nice send-off. Of course, he first had to try to marginalize you by pointing out to his right-wing listeners how you're dangerous liberal lefty.
Well, no, listen, I just moments before I had even said to him, look, Roger, I suspect that you and I disagree on just about everything politically, but I'm delighted that we can get together and at least agree on this much. So, I don't think it was marginalization. And, you know, in as much as I, when I covered it on my blog, I said, look, this guy is a far right, wing nut. But, you know, it underscores the fact of what I've been talking about, I've been contending for a long time. This is not about partisanship. It never has been. Despite the folks that we see, you know, who love to come on and say guys like me are, you know, sour grapes and, you know, you're just sad your guy didn't win or whatever it is, it's never been like that. I don't care who won the Busby Bill Bray race. I do not care whether it was the Republican or the Democrat, as long as it was the person who received the most votes. If we don't have that, Peter, we have got nothing. in this country anymore and in this democracy.
Tell us about these special town hall meetings that are going to be convened Tuesday and Wednesday. And let me give the information first, and then you can talk about what will be occurring there. In Los Angeles, Tuesday, June 27th, starting at 7:30 in the evening at the Venice United Methodist Church. That's at Lincoln and Victoria, 1020 Victoria, a block north of Venice Boulevard. And in San Diego, right there in the belly of the beast, it'll be Wednesday night, 7 p.m. start time, at the Oceanside Civic Center. That's 330 North Coast Highway in Oceanside. That's a community near San Diego. And what are you going to present there, Brad?
Well, you know, as you know, the media is not telling the story on this, and they're not educating the folks. So for a start, you're going to get a fistful of Brad, whether you like it or not. And what we're going to be doing is, educating folks about what the hell happened here. how to, you know, because right now it is up to the people, as I've said many times. They need to know what happened here so they can raise hell, so they can hold these election officials accountable. So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about, you know, what we're going to be doing moving forward as far as any legal actions in this case goes. And a lot of this is still fluid as we're dealing with attorneys and a bunch of different parties involved here. Marcy Winograd from PDA is going to be talking. Mimi Kennedy from both PDA and the California Elections Protection Network.
And PDA is not a wireless device. It's Progressive Democrats of America.
That's right. And as a matter of fact, as she has said to me, you know, as soon as the Progressive Republicans of America form an organization, then they will be invited to this event as well. We'd love to have them. As a matter of fact, by the way, I have invited Roger Hedgecock to come speak at either or both of these events. So this is, you know, once again, underscoring the nonpartisan nature of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Jeannie Crescenzo, a candidate down there from San Diego, she's going to be speaking at both events. And Rob Cohen, one of the co-directors of the Votergate film, which will be coming out in full soon in the next few months, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be there with, he's got about 7 or 8 minutes of footage of a poll worker back in, I think it was 2004 actually, who had a whole bunch of these voting machines at their home, and showing them peeling on and off these supposed, safety seals that are supposed to be, you know, not breached and protecting these machines, these little plastic pieces of tape.
Mm-hmm.
So he's
well,
going to be talking.
You can just put a little smiley face over that, and it'll be okay, right?
Yeah, that'll work. Well, that's about what it is, Peter. It's really not much more than that. And by the way, down in San Diego, I'm told that prior to the event, which starts at 7 in San Diego, Oceanside, there'll be a rally out front, I think from 6 to 7, on all of these points. And additionally, we hope then on Thursday to be having a press conference and or demonstration in front of or near the Registrar of Voters office down there in San Diego to announce some of the legal initiatives. And everyone's invited to show up in their pajamas to underscore that sleepovers are inappropriate for voting machines.
I think that's a great idea. Since it's hot summer weather, people won't mind being out there in their jammies.
There you go.
That's nice. So. Let's take a call. Dave's on the line from Eureka. Hello, Dave. Say hello to Brad.
Hey, Peter. Brad, if this country can be saved, you guys are going to have a real part in doing it. Tell me I didn't hear this right. Most of the people that are thinking people in Florida no longer trust the voting machine, so most of them are going to vote absentee. However, I'm hearing that those ballots are going to be run through Debo vote counting machines and that the machine will affect the ballot in such a way that it will not any longer be able to be manually recounted. Am I hearing that right?
Yeah. Look, absentee ballots, people think sending in absentee ballots are fine and safe. Never mind that about 1 to 2% of them, I understand, get lost in the mail. But assuming they get there, then, yeah, those absentee ballots are counted by the same scanners, the same optical scanners that are used. And in the case of Florida, of course, Diebold optical scanners. And, yes, in the state of Florida, it is law that once a ballot has been counted by a machine, it may not be counted by hand ever legally.
God,
wow.
When When there's new ways to cheat, the GOP finds it, don't they?
Now, is that a new regulation, Brad, that an absentee ballot can't be counted twice?
Yeah, just absentee ballots, but
any
ballot that has already been counted by a machine. I believe that came into law in the Sunshine State in 2005, if I'm not mistaken. It may have been I can't remember if it's 04 or 05, but yeah, it's pretty new. And this was really underscored. Remember, it was this hack in Leon County, Florida, in Tallahassee in December of 2005 that underscored the issue when, you know, an optical scan machine, a Diebold optical scan machine, had been hacked and the results of the election were completely flipped. And the only way you would have ever found out that that had occurred would have been if you actually counted the paper ballots on that optical scan machine. But because it's Florida, you ain't allowed to.
Wow. Dave, I'm really glad you raised that because, I do a talk show, and I often learn things on this talk show, and I just did. Brad, we're going to take a break and return. Anybody else got a question or comment, bring it on. 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast, or toll-free from anywhere coast to coast, 1-888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. We'll continue with Brad Friedman in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Tired of stale syndicated right-wing blowhards?
And we are thrilled and honored to have with us Donald Rumsfeld.
You got a bunch of dopey kids watching these shows. Oh, O'Reilly!
Here on KRXA 540, you can hear a fresh local liberal blowhard.
And another thing, Coach, you could strip me naked, stake me to an anthill, pour honey all over me, and I still wouldn't vote for a Republican.
Hal on the show every morning from 9 to 10, only on KRXA 540. Down in
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Tom Hartman.
And Hans Blix was saying, there's no threat there. In a week and a half before we invaded, Hans Blix and Mohammed Al-Bar and I were going to submit a report to the UN saying, there's no evidence of weapons of mass destruction here. We have found the proof that they actually destroyed them. And Bush knew that. That's why he had to invade as quickly as he did.
It's the Tom Hartman Program.
It's not a war. It's a crime. Invading another country is a crime. Just like when Hitler invaded Poland, this is a crime.
Tom Hartman. Weekday mornings, 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
KRXA 540 checks your traffic at 547. One more time, here's Amy Knight.
We're off to the beach, South 17, slow from before the Lexington Reservoir all the way over to Mount Hermon Road, so expect delays. Also, southbound one before Soquel Drive, an earlier accident cleared, but it's still very heavy from before the fish hook. Southbound 101 at San Miguel Canyon Road, an accident off to the right-hand shoulder, and a large crate, Highway 68 at Spreckles Boulevard. Also, Highway 101 northbound at 146, a box of produce in the left lane, and westbound Blackie at Borromeo, an injury accident with an overturned car. Test drive the new 2007 Audi Q7 4.2 SUV. Visit the Bay Area Audi dealer or BayAreaAudiDealer.com for info. The It's the Audi Q7, the new luxury SUV industry. Have a great weekend.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B. A couple of quick notes before we resume with Brad. Number one, Sunday night,
We will be. I'll be participating with Kevin Danaher of Global Exchange at a very interesting presentation of a new documentary, another extension of the 9/11 Truth Movement. This documentary is called 9/11 Guilt, The Proof is in Your Hands, and the researchers Jim Hoffman and Don Paul will be there for a live presentation as well. It's in Marin County in Larkspur at the Lark Theater. Starts at 7 p.m. Sunday, and some of you may be able to join me there. If it works out, that'll be great. And also, I just got word that I will be sitting in for Tom Hartman on his national radio program Monday and probably Tuesday next week. So if you can handle double doses of Peter B. in Eureka and Monterey, well, be prepared. And now we go back to Brad Friedman of bradblog.com.
I think I'm doing Tom Hartman's show Monday as well.
But well, we'll be talking.
But it might be the local show, his local show. I'm not sure.
There are some things going on in Tom's life, so there may be you probably will be on the show. It looks like Tom won't be able to be there on Monday.
Oh, well, I hope that's okay. If they cancel me, it's 7:30 a.m., and I could use some sleep.
So. Okay. Well, Brad, one other thing I wanted to talk about, and then I've got a caller or two who want to talk to you, is that you and I have been talking with Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, the Democrat from the Chicago North Suburbs, who surprised me at that event in Washington last week when she acknowledged Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s article, said she agrees that the Ohio presidential election was stolen in 2004, and apologized to those of us who've been calling into question these tainted elections. And we had another conversation with her this week, and toward the end I asked her if she had taken a look at California 50 and the June 6th primary. And she said, honestly, she had not. And I pointed her to a place called bradblog.com.
Oh, they're very good over there.
And I asked her to get up to speed on that because it's an important issue, and I just kind of outlined the basic facts for her. And I really do feel that she is taking a strong interest in this and will become an important ally in this struggle that we're involved in.
I hope you're right. I spoke with her not long after she made that speech, and haven't been able to follow up yet with her. I've been talking to everybody across this country, it seems like, about this, from the DNC on down to the folks in San Diego and everywhere else. I hope you're right, because we have heard, one person after another, come in years after the fact and say, gosh, I'm sorry, I should have listened to what you guys were saying, which is why here we are, here and now, I'm, yelling and screaming about what is going on at this moment down in San Diego. And, Peter, you know me, I don't necessarily stick on any one topic. I have not reported, I don't think, anything but this race for the past 2 weeks because I feel it is that important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I don't want 2 years down the road to, some people to say, boy, I wish we had listened to Brad Friedman back in June of 2006. I'm concerned, but, I'm going to do everything I can to keep that from happening.
Clearly are doing everything you can, and I really appreciate that just as a regular American. Let's go to Paula in Marina. Paula, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. I've got a comment and some information and a question for you and Brad, perhaps.
Okay.
One is that this whole practice of taking these things home by poll workers goes on in all 58 counties and has for some time. And the reason why I say this is because without naming what county I work for, I do work for a county government.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm familiar with that practice. And, they did that when it was paper ballots, but obviously we're in a completely different situation now with a much higher risk and vulnerability. So that's just some information. The other thing is in this situation, the question would be, how do we turn this back and really what do we do with this at this point? As so many governments are locked into this. And then the other thing is I would suggest, and maybe I'm being really negative, but perhaps the reason why some of the right wing is actually concerned about this is because they see the vulnerability, they see the political tide turning on them as well, and they're afraid this may be done to them as well.
You're
maybe that's
there,
why they're concerned.
All right, Brett, let's take them one at a time here. I think she's correct that it has been a practice in many jurisdictions to send election materials home with election workers so that they can just report directly to the polls on election day. Mm-hmm. But clearly that's not consistent with the emergency security measures that were imposed after McPherson recertified the machines.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They're trying to administer elections here using the old paradigms as if everything is, you know, the same as it was. No, it didn't used to matter. You could send a machine home and there wasn't much you could do with it at home. At best, you might be able to do something, but it would be easily found and it certainly couldn't affect all of the other machines in the race. So yeah, they've moved forward, lurched forward without thinking about all of these, you know, hidden problems, and this is just one of them. And yeah, it's been done for a long time, but this is the first time it's been done since these procedures, and it underscores how those procedures, the old procedures, don't work anymore.
Okay. She also asked if she was just a general question, you know, what can we do about this? And you're doing what you can. You're having these emergency town hall meetings, doing every possible step, including inviting people in their pajamas so there's a nice B-roll picture for the TV guys. I mean, you're spoon-feeding this to the media and the public, and unfortunately, there aren't enough people consuming it.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if folks like Lou Dobbs, who's been reporting on this, if he picks up on this one. I've heard that he might.
Tell him if he comes to Oceanside, you'll give him a free trip to the border.
Oh, there you go, where he can yell names across the border.
He'll personally secure part of it.
Well, you know, I want to thank her. Karen, was it?
That was Paula.
Paula, mm-hmm. Who called in, because, you know, a lot of times folks think that we're coming down on election officials and election workers. Yeah, I do come down on some elections officials, like the folks, Michael Haas in San Diego, like Debbie Hench up in San Joaquin, who are just not listening to the voters. I don't know who the hell they think they're working for, but I tell you,
Brad,
the voters.
Brad, you're suggesting that somebody might have illicit intent in working at a polling place on election day.
That would never happen. Why would anyone be willing to commit a felony involved with an election? That's what Michael Haas said.
He can see no evil.
Yeah, despite all of the folks, including just three poll workers, I think yesterday, indicted down in Tennessee for gaming an election, and I mean this happens all over the place. So you're not supposed to trust these people. So I want to thank Paula for the work she's doing and being willing to speak out about it. We need more folks like Paula raising hell with their registrars and coming out. I hope, Paula, please contact me after the show if you can, brad@bradblog.com. I'd love to touch base with you and see what we can do, because we need more elections officials coming out and saying, hey, this ain't right anymore. We've got to do something about it.
Julie, join us from Carmel by the Sea. You're on the air with Peter B. and Brad.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
There are probably 5,000 questions I have for Brad. What a great blog. I have a comment about the 2004 election, and this is secondhand. And I confess that I have not voted electronically, so I don't quite understand this. But my brother had a friend in St. Mary's County who tried to vote Democrat, and it kept coming back as a Republican vote. Every time she tried to register it, it came back Republican. And she's a truth teller, and so is he. So that's, I'm just throwing it out there.
Well, that's not an isolated case, right, Brent?
No, we've seen thousands of incidents of that in 2004, and pretty much zero incidents of it going the other way around, where you had someone trying to vote for Bush and having it hop to Kerry. It didn't happen.
See, that's odd.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I have a question for you. I've read your blog a lot, and I think I passed this one on to Peter, and I don't know where it came from, but I did read that somebody had photographed Mohammed Atta and some of his friends on Jack Abramoff's yacht.
Well,
on one of his yachts.
Yeah, they were tanning with Ann Coulter. I don't know about that. Let's be clear that Abramoff and his crony bought it was called Sun Cruise, a cruise ship line based in Florida. So it's possible that Atta took a ride on one of those ships.
Yeah, apparently he did. The report is that he was on one of those Sun Cruise ships prior to 9/11, and prior to when he was, I think, even supposed to have been in the country, according to the timeline. And that Sun Cruise, that was Jack Abramoff had bought the ships, and now the original owner was murdered, and he's been somewhat implicated in that without having time to go into the details.
Julie, thanks for the call. Brad, thanks for your work. Good luck with those emergency town hall meetings next
week.
Gonna
need it. Thank you, brother.
Until we meet again, happy trails to you.
Hi, this is Ed Schultz, America's number one progressive talker. Join me every weekday from noon to 3 here on KRXA 540. I'm based in Fargo, North Dakota, and we bring you news and views from the heartland of America. I'm fighting the righties every day on behalf of the working people who've made the nation great. Tell your friends to listen. Give me a call toll-free, 1-877-934-6833. The Ed Schultz Show, noon to 3 on KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
Tom Hartman.
We have given our electoral process, the franchise by which democracy happens, the most vital part of the commons by which we administer the commons, we have privatized it. We have turned it over to private for-profit corporations.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
And they have no damn business telling us how we voted.
The new Radio Free America, Tom Hartman. Weekday mornings 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Arnold Schwarzenegger says, enough. The California governor reluctantly agreed to deploy 1,000 National Guard troops along the Mexican border, but then the Bush administration asked for more. California Guard officials say the Pentagon wanted the troops to cover recruiting shortfalls in Arizona and New Mexico, but Schwarzenegger refused, saying that sending another 1,500 troops would stretch California's forces too thin in the event of a disaster or other emergency. A Republican running for governor of Arizona wants to create a camp for illegal immigrants and put them to work along the border.
I would use the volunteer inmate labor down on the southern borders to build a fence if the state has to build their own fence, because the federal government's not going to do it, to clean up the desert and to repair the ranches that they're tearing up.
Don Goldwater is a nephew of the late Senator Barry Goldwater. Senator John McCain and Congressman Jim Colby called the proposal deeply offensive. They're asking their fellow Republicans to reject Goldwater in the September primary. Yet again, sensitive information on military personnel has been compromised. CBS News correspondent David Martin reports.
The U.S. Navy, specifically the Navy's Office of Personnel, has discovered that approximately 28,000 sailors and their family members had some kind of personal identification, such as name, birth date, and Social Security, show up on a public website.
The information's been taken down. In recent weeks, the Pentagon and the Veterans Affairs Department have acknowledged the thefts of data on millions of present and former military personnel. For the second time this week, a taped message from Ayman al-Zawahiri, al-Qaeda's number two, reacts to the death of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the al-Qaeda leader in Iraq. Al-Zawahiri calls Zarqawi the Prince of Martyrs and vows revenge for his death. An FBI official says the alleged terrorist cell arrested in Miami was more aspirational than operational. Seven men are charged with plotting to blow up federal buildings in Miami and the Sears Tower in Chicago, but authorities say they had not yet acquired any bomb-making material. CBS News correspondent Jim Stewart says law enforcement is worried about homegrown terrorists like the ones in London who bombed buses last year.
These boys looked on the Internet. They learned how to